Welcome to peoplesinternetradio.com. Vin here, folks. It is a, well, what is it? It's the 3rd of the 4th, 2016 AD. Welcome to peoplesinternetradio.com. Tonight my guest will be Billy Maguire for the first hour and Chris Fogarty. So don't go anywhere, folks. Thanks very much to Alan and the guys at OIM. I have Billy Maguire and Chris Fogarty on the line right now. So I'll say hello to both of you gentlemen for the moment.
Well, good evening, Chris, and good evening to Vincent, and to good evening to your listeners. And a belated happy Easter.
You
hi,
too.
Hi, Billy. Mary here.
Just hello, Mary.
Hi.
Good, that's done now. Good, we're all set.
Okay, so we'll just start anyway, I suppose, Billy. Maybe do you want to... There's a video actually freshly put up onto YouTube. I did add it to the site earlier on. And there's a question on the chat box for both of you from Delamitri, and it's, I suppose, sort of relating to that. But the video itself, Chris, did you see that video, the presentation Billy made at the GPO?
Outside of I see. I did indeed. Very, very well done. Very, very nice.
Thank you, Chris.
Circulated it around the States also.
They told us 750,000 people were on O'Connell Street. We don't know that for sure, but... they were all listening to that. You know, it's as you know, I don't write out those speeches. I just do them as so I don't know, you know, how accurate they are afterwards, but they tell me it was, and was factually everything was correct in that I wanted to say. And that was our 100th anniversary of the Rising. And I thought it was very sad. You know, we had RTE there on for months and years coming up to 2016, and they didn't contact the Irish Athenian Republican Brotherhood once. And, you know, they're rewriting our history, and I think it's an awful shame. We weren't invited to one event, not one event was the Irish Athenian Republican Brotherhood, and they put the tricolour up. That's our tricolour flag, and that's our proclamation. They never mentioned that once, RTE or any of the journalists. And I think it's very sad after 100 years that those volunteers and Citizens Army and Cumann na Mban and Athenia and Inni na hÉireann and all those who gave their lives, and that couldn't be, they just couldn't mention it because we only have a provisional government. And I mentioned at the GPO that we had five governments in the state, and the name of the state is the Sovereign Republic of Éire. That's what those volunteers went out and gave their lives for. And I think we have five constitutions, and there's only one sovereign, Dáil Éireann. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House. And I think it's time those politicians, you know, came up to the mark and told the truth for once. And I think it's very sad to think that what those volunteers... The 1916 Rising was very important, but what was crucial was that we would have a sovereign government. And as I explained in that at the GPO... that the Crown of England, that's royalty. The Crown, British government is the British Crown. That is a royal government and royal courts of justice. They get their sovereignty from us. And it's time that went on. 1155, you can go back yourself and trace it. You don't need to say what I said. There's all these historians who have been very well paid for 2016 and have not come out with the truth. And I think it's time they did. And it's very sad to stand there in O'Connell Street, you know, on Easter Monday, and to see we weren't even allowed to put up our tricolour flag. There was a flagpole in front of the GPO put up, and the Defence Forces were raising it at 12 noon and taking it down at sunset. And they took it down, I think it was the Thursday or Friday, before Easter Monday, the way we couldn't put up our tricolour flag. They're in denial of the facts. And I think it's time that all that lies and deception, that has to stop. And those sovereign seals and tarps and Easter lilies, shamrocks, all those symbols of the state, and all the sovereignty where the Queen is. That's why General de Gaulle would not allow Britain to join for the EEC at that time, because Britain didn't have a sovereign government. They have a royal government and royal courts of arms. Anybody can see that.
It seemed that Ireland is now being run by its own enemies.
Exactly.
I was told this morning that there are some three or four NATO warships in the port of Dublin. That's the strangest possible thing. I thought Ireland was supposed to be an independent nation and not part of this group of this cabal of war criminal nations. It is disgusting. And tell me something else. Is it true that a week or so ago there was a new wall put up in Glasnevin Cemetery where the black and tans, murderers all, and the British soldiers invading Ireland from Britain are all honored equally to those who died for Ireland? Is that true?
That was put up today. They opened that today, and you know all the great and the good there. And yet James Stephen's grave and John O'Mahony's grave are there, and they wouldn't even go to them. They wouldn't even show them. You know, they were the ones who founded the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood in 1858 on St. Patrick's Day. And that's the reason why we celebrate St. Patrick's Day. And they were the ones who founded, you know, the state. And yet they won't recognize those people.
When did the Irish politicians start to work for the enemy? Is it after they're elected into office, or are they pre-selected?
No, the 6th of December 1921, that's when it was all sold out. And I think it's very sad to see. And our people are still being sold out. And as you rightly say, Chris, you know, the Holocaust, that's what caused the famine. And taking all our food. But all that food was taken for war. And we don't go to war. We're a defense force. That we defend ourselves. And we're sovereign citizens. The people, David Cameron said the other day, I think it was the British government, he said, the British people are sovereign, and it will be a sovereign vote on Europe. The British people are not sovereign. They're subjects to the Crown of England. You can't be sovereign and subject at the same time.
Can I just come in there, Billy, for a moment? Sorry, can I just come in there for a moment? What Cameron, I noticed as well, he was also trying to say in relation to, I don't know if either of you are aware, apparently the UN recently has said that Argentina's territorial waters now extend beyond what the English would call the Falkland Islands, and of course what they call in Argentina the Maldivas. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, yes, it's interesting that... finally, the United Nations is taking the right side there, and the Malvinas are likely going to become properly Argentine again.
Well, I the reason I bring it up is I noticed some of his comments again would seem quite dry in the mouths of somebody if they were spoken on this land. Essentially, I don't like to use the word hypocritical, but it's extraordinarily hypocritical.
Yes. It might interest the listeners to know, I was in the Malvinas once, and there was a place for sale down there by Douglas Greenshields. His people had been there since 1833, since the officers of the British Army in Crimea were given land if the British Army could take it from Argentina. So that was done. All the local people were killed, and then these officers settled there. But he was trying to sell. He has 135,000 acres on the so-called East Falkland, raising exclusively sheep. So the whole place was for sale, 135,000 acres, quite a village, and a line of shepherd's shacks out along the way, all for sale, an asking price of $500,000 U.S. But the British government was refusing him permission to sell to anybody but another Brit.
Wow.
And Chris, your ambassador of the United States of America was in Glasnevin today supporting that wall that was put up with all the names on it. And we saw him on television this morning.
Let there be no mistake about it. He would be the one who has forced the Irish to put up that wall. America is now being run by neocons, and the Irish government is run by those corporate neocons. Ireland is a full member now of the genocidal nations, and that's a shame. And by the way, the same person who told me about the warships in the port of Dublin this morning also told me about three warplanes of the U.S. government at Shannon. So Ireland is being betrayed by its supposed leaders. The supposed leaders are now working for the international neocons, those who are causing the wars all over the world.
But Chris, I've said many times that you cannot understand 1916. You have to go back to Sir Edward Carson in 1912 when he founded the Ulster Volunteers. And in 1913, they became the UVF Army. And we've had many programs here. And finally, they admitted that those guns were German guns. And the question I keep asking is, who paid for those German guns? And we're not told that. The RT won't tell us, or any of those programs. But we know who paid for them. It was Guinness and Lord Rothschild and Robert Kipling. And the 250,000 they gave. They paid for the German guns. And Sir Roger Casement, who did, I suppose, something similar for us with just a few guns, very poor quality guns, he was hung for that. It was treason to the crown. And how is it it isn't treason for Lord Rothschild, Rupert Kipling, and Guinness to do the same thing? And as you know, that was in 1913, and when the intelligence officers of the Irish Republican Brotherhood reported to the Supreme Council of what happened, they founded the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army as a defence force. And in 1913, that's when that happened. And Tom McGuire, my grand uncle, and Sam McGuire, who was secretary of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, the Irish Republican Brotherhood were looking for the Circle and the Sailors was known. And Sam was sent to the post office in London to collect the intelligence on the Crown Force and on the UVF Army. And Tom was sent to Calcutta in India to collect the intelligence on the Crown Forces. And they were all sent through those offices in the post office in London. And Sam brought those every week to Vaughan's Hotel. And that's how they got the intelligence. And in 1914, the UVF Army declared war on Britain and Ireland if Home Rule was imposed by the British government. And the British government, they capitulated to the UVF Army. And why isn't that told? You can't understand 1916 if you don't understand that. And you can't understand the plans for the retreat from the GPO. And they were up Moore Street because they're all in the Vaughan's Hotel papers, which Billy, I gave to the University of Limerick. And they refused to allow those papers to be shown to anybody. And how can RTE and how can all those historians write the history of 1916, 2016 without those papers and without the facts? We're not being told the facts. We've been told propaganda, lies and deception.
Well,
and the escape plans from the GPO were up Moore Street. And those tunnels that are down from the rotunda right up to Vaughan's Hotel, and they're all over that. We would not have bought Vaughan's Hotel without those tunnels, because you couldn't. That's how they won the 1918 32 county election, and that's how they won the War of Independence. Without those tunnels, and I was on last Monday, Easter Monday, a gentleman came up to me and he said, I grew up here as a child, he said, and we used to play down those tunnels. And another person told me that, when those houses, those magnificent Georgian houses were built there, it was Rutland Square, of course, in those days, that the gentry used to go up to Monto, which was the red light district, and they didn't want to be seen going up to Monto, and they went down those tunnels. And yes, our own provincial government and our own historians will not give you the facts of those tunnels. That was the escape plan, and the Crown Forces blocked them there at Moore Street, and they couldn't get there. If they got down those tunnels, they would have escaped, and they would have gone to all the safe houses in the country. And Dermot Lynch, who took down the tricolour flag, has never been captured. That's the Irish Republican Brotherhood, Fenian Brotherhood tricolour flag that was ratified on the 21st of January 1919 under the 1918 32 county election. And Dermot Lynch brought that, he told me himself, he brought that flag up under those tunnels to Vaughan's Hotel and was kept there until it was ratified on the 21st of January 1919.
Billy, can I come in there just for a second? Because there's something, I don't know if you're aware of this, in the Sunday Business Post on March the 27th. Did you see that by any chance? An article by Michael McDowell. Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
Well, I'm sorry for interrupting you there, but I think both yourself and Chris will find this very interesting. I'll read a little bit of it here for you. And again, Michael McDowell, no less. Remember, that's who wrote this article, folks. And it's a number of myths have distorted the truth about the Rising. It's time to dispel them and honour our patriots, he says. It begins, the centenary of the Easter Rising is surrounded in myth, moral ambiguity, historical revisionism and political reinterpretation and reinvention. For those like myself, he says, who unambiguously value and cherish the establishment of an independent, sovereign Irish Republic, 1916 is the starting point of its existence, albeit that it was not brought to fruition for years afterwards. It is not in that we glory in violence or in death. it is that we honour and celebrate those who set the achievement of our liberty in train. He said the year 1916 was not a start of the century of political violence in Ireland, as it is sometimes claimed. The British Tory establishment from 1912 to 1914 backed the creation of the UVF, armed to the teeth with German weapons, and approbated the establishment of a provisional government in Ulster sworn to resist by violence both the will of the Irish people for home rule and the authority of the Westminster Parliament. Now, that's just the beginning of that article, but already I can imagine you probably want to comment on that.
It's amazing. As Michael B. Higgins said, pretty much the same thing. Did he blame the Tory government for having sided with violence of the Ulster people against were fighting on wanted to fight on England's side against Ireland?
Well, isn't Michael McDonald saying the very same thing that I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And he was a member of the provisional government, and he was Attorney General. And I wrote to him. In fact, I went to see him in Limerick once. Why is it that he can't come out and tell the truth? And I, if you want me to, I can call out those five governments that we have in the state. We have the British government in Northern Ireland. We have the six-county Stormont government in Stormont. And we have the provincial government in Leinster House. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House. It's the Royal Dáil and the Royal Oireachtas imposed on the 6th of December 1921 that sits in Leinster House as a provisional government. And you have the sovereign government by the will of all the people on 1918 32 county election, ratified on the 21st of January 1919. And then you have the European government. Is that five I've counted for you? And then you have the five constitutions. You have the sovereign constitution. And then you have the Free State Constitution imposed by King George V in the Shelburne Hotel. And then you have De Valera's 37 constitution. It's amazing how De Valera, the great Republican, could leave Republic out of the 37 constitution. And then you have the British constitution. And you have the European Constitution. And none of those four constitutions recognize the sovereign constitution by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election. And none of those four governments recognize the sovereign government by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election. And all of the Irish Republican Brotherhood, we abhor violence, we abhor war, corruption, maladministration, propaganda, lies, and deception. And all we want is the sovereign government, the legitimate government of the state, the sovereign Republic of Ireland, by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election and ratified on the 21st of January 1919 in GHQ Vaughan's Hotel by the executive of the Supreme Council.
Well, apparently you're in good company with Michael McDowell. Sorry? Because you're in good company, seemingly, Billy, with Michael McDowell, because he also says this at the end of that article. He said, for my part, I'm quoting Michael McDowell, he says, for my part, I believe that becoming and remaining a sovereign, independent republic has been and will be good for Ireland and for the Irish economically, socially and culturally. He says, I do not believe that Ireland would have equally prospered. I do not believe that Ireland would have equally prospered if it had remained a province of the UK, as the fates of Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Northern England demonstrate.
Well said, yes.
It's a very interesting article. What I'll do is I'm actually going to print that up for you, Billy, and I'll post you down a copy of it. Because I think, in fact, everybody who can get their hands on that, I will put the picture on the website as well. I think it's well worth reading. He also mentions Casement and Bulmer Hobson, McNeil, and many other names in there. And, we would suggest that he missed out a few things. But however, I was absolutely shocked, Billy, to find that article. It was actually, one of the chaps in Cork pointed an article out to me. And he said he had to read it two or three times. He said he was astounded because it's the first time he's seen in print in a so-called Irish newspaper what we've been saying here and what you've been indeed saying to us for the last 7 years.
53 years.
We've been saying it on the internet for 7 years.
And my family is 97.
Absolutely.
And how is it that he couldn't attend or refused to attend the Mansion House on the 21st of January. You know, I mean, it's time that they grew up, those people. They're getting huge money and huge salaries, and you'd wonder, is it all just about their salaries? And what's going on at the moment is just farcical.
Well,
a provisional government.
I've
and
heard
when we have a sovereign government, and it can never... Who dissolved it? Who dissolved our sovereign
absolutely.
Government?
Well, what they're talking about as well, and Higgins and a few others have made these comments, they're basically saying, where did they get their mandate from? And we know where the mandate came from, but I would hasten to add, where does Higgins et al. Believe somebody needs a mandate to shake off an oppressor?
Well, look, in every society, in every country, and especially in our, we call it a Christian, and ours, you have a right to defend yourself. And every country, all we do is defend ourselves. We're not interested in going to war. In actual fact, the harp is never taken to war. As you know what happened to the Hebrew people and everyone who has ever taken it, it's been disastrous. And look, Michael D. Higgins is the usurper president. And to me, and he just will not tell the truth. He has, where is he getting a 26 county president in this day and age? Why doesn't he recognize the sovereign government by the will of all the people? He's going around waving our proclamation. That's Irish. And if you look at it, having organized and trained her manhood through her secret revolutionary organization, the Irish Republican Brotherhood. There you are. It's on the thing. And how is it that RTE or any of those programs would not read out that part of our proclamation? Who owns it and who wrote it and ratified by the way? We only do it for the sovereign citizens, the right and welfare of our sovereign citizens. That's what we do it. And we declare the right of the people of Ireland to the ownership of Ireland and to the unfettered control of Irish destinies, to be sovereign and indefeasible. That means you can never be changed. And this thing that Enda Kenny said, I think it was the third of that he was going to the president to dissolve Dáil Éireann. Michael D. Higgins doesn't have the right to dissolve Dáil Éireann because he's nothing to do. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House. Dáil Éireann sat in the Mansion House, and that's where it is. And they're the facts of the matter. And Michael D. Higgins, it's treason for Michael D. Higgins to pretend that he can. He's the usurper president under King George V, and that's where he gets that from. And he cannot dissolve Dáil Éireann, nor can anybody else ever dissolve Dáil Éireann. It's still there, and it's time those politicians grasp that fact. That's what the people want, a sovereign government, and the rights and the welfare, the assets of the state will be invested in the people and in their children. Every child in this country is born sovereign, and that's what we want. And we want that sovereign government in the 100th anniversary by the will of all the people. We don't have any government now, good, bad or indifferent, and it's time that sovereign government was put there by the politicians.
Well, can I just bring Chris in there again for a second? Chris, I don't know, how did you attend anything to mark any ceremonies over there? Any?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Sorry, did we lose you there for a second?
Okay. Yes, we've been doing quite a bit here. And I must say, we have people here who are working toward monuments over our mass grave, of course, in Ireland. There's another one going up in North Leinster these days. We call it centennial here mostly, has been commemorated all over the country, but certainly wherever the Irish settled, it's been a measure. But I must say, wherever the Irish consuls of Ireland are, it is always turned into something ambiguous, something that should be mentioned, but there's always a talk about Irish violence, and it is quite disgusting. Whenever the Irish, so-called Irish government is present, it is always perverted. It's really a shame. The people of Ireland are being very poorly represented by their government. They should make a change. They should take back all their offshore oil. They should end this entire water scam they've got going now and take it away. Ireland is being taken over by the international neocon warriors, banksters, and the Irish people should take back their country. We have our own work to do here in the United States, because we too have been taken over.
Absolutely.
These are dire conditions for mankind, and I'm very much afraid of where it's going if the people do not start exerting their own sovereignty over their government. we're doomed.
And do you think, Chris, I've just had a very interesting little message come in there from Mr. T. Nice to hear from Mr. T out there again. Hi, Mr. T. And he says, tell Billy that he's talking about the state and federal as if they were the same thing, private and public. He said, there's a difference. You haven't lost your sovereignty. And of course, I know you would realise that, Billy, as many people here also realise, you can't actually lose your sovereignty, folks. It's just that, you know, the people who are operating in government are seemingly trying to ignore it or pretend it doesn't exist. And as the population realises, fully realises, and enters into their sovereignty, really, they find it very difficult, which, of course, is why they don't want us to realise that. You know, I think it's... sorry, would you like to make a comment on that, Billy or Chris?
Go ahead, Billy.
You know, the Queen's visit, which was, you know, regarded as a very successful visit here, and, you know, the House of Lords, they liaised with the Irish Republican Brotherhood for 10 years, and she laid the wreath at the Garden of Remembrance, and we saw the Garden of Remembrance last Saturday, yesterday week, and of course the Irish Republican Brotherhood, needless to say, weren't invited. But it was that, and the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process, which was founded by the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood in 1950, and was predicated all that Good Friday and all that thing, which I know you're against, Chris, and so are the rest of us, you know, on the Truth Commission coming out, that you would go back to 1912 and you would tell the truth about what happened with this thing that's blaming us for something that the UVF army did and the British capitulated to it. You know, why can't the truth come out? And why can't they tell the truth for once in Ireland?
Is now a good time.
They are our neighbours.
Is now a good time, Billy, to reiterate that what the IRB had in mind was peaceful, that it was from the 32 county in 1918, was the intention to use the as a mandate to form a sovereign government peacefully in 1919.
That's exactly what it was, Vincent. We never wanted to go to war with anybody, do we even want to go to war?
I think it's important that that's repeated, because everybody seems to forget that, or rather, most people don't even seem to know about it. And that's partly what we've been doing here for the last 7 years, is we've been putting that out there. People have been asking all the questions, and anybody who has a question, feel free to ask the question. You know, Billy McGuire, as far as I know, has never avoided one question ever.
But you're right, Vince. That's what it was about, to set up a sovereign government, that the people would, you know, have ownership of their land. You know, instead of taking all the food out of the country, as Chris has told us in the Holocaust, all for war. We don't go to war. We have nothing to do with war. We're not interested in going to war with another country. We're only interested in our own people and the welfare and rights of our people and citizens. That's what we're interested in. And all that food being taken out by the Crown forces to feed an army. And all that food, all that those landlords' estates, they were all set up here for the same purpose of taking everything we had. And the people left here. And look at the disaster it caused here. And we're still reeling from that.
It might be time here to mention that the landlords were not Irish, that the brand new lie has been fabricated in the last 10 years. And after the amount of Irish food being taken over to Britain and throughout its colonies and to the world markets, after that was demolished, that they could no longer hide that, they developed a brand new lie. And that lie is, it was the rich Irish starving the poor Irish. And that is a new lie that's got to be put down. And the way to put it down, I believe, is to bring out the fact that nearly all of Ireland's landlords were repatriated to England between 1900 and 1910. It occurred before 1900 and continued after 1910, but most of them went in that decade, and they were bought out, and then the Irish people, the recipients of that land, was striped into typically 28 or 30-acre parcels with a couple of acres of bog in the nearest bog somewhere, and those recipients amortized what was given, the over-market, the above-market price is given to those English landlords, and they were paying that off until the 1970s, as my father was, and all of his neighbors, and everyone we ever knew in County Roscommon, and I'm sure throughout the country, everyone, the recipients of their own land back, they had to pay for from the time it was divided around 1910, 1913, up and through the 1970s. They were paying off what was given to the English landlords. So they were English landlords, not Irish landlords.
Well, there's an interesting thing going on here, Chris, believe it or not, that ties directly into that. There was an act passed to charge wealthy landlords at the time rates to provide some relief for the poor and indigent starving Irish people. And it was basically because the main English landlords, as you say, who were here under the crown, they weren't giving alms. So this act was passed, and it's still in operation today, and they've converted it into what they call, the modern-day reference is rates. Now, I had a man with me here about a week and a half ago, and he's a young businessman, and they've now charged, they're looking to charge rates on all businesses. But instead of helping the poor with the rates, they're actually using them to put up basically useless road signs everywhere and cycle paths, which are good, but what they're doing is they're putting the businesses out of business with the rate fee. It's too much. They can't afford them. So I just find that, you know, something that was supposedly brought in to help the poor is now actually being used to oppress small businesses because businessmen just simply can't afford them.
When it was brought in, by the way, in County Offaly, eight English landlords owned the entire county, essentially the entire county, and they couldn't collect from absentees. They could only collect from them if they were living in Ireland at the time. But all of the eight English landlords that owned the County Offaly were living in England and therefore unavailable from which to collect the necessary rates at the time. That was the poor law rates.
That's right.
But everyone I left Ireland, everyone that I knew, were paying rents and rates. The rents was to pay off the old English landlord, but then under De Valera in the 1930s, he stopped sending it to England and kept it, but they still kept charging the Irish farmers. So that was continued up until somewhere in the 1970s. But rates were always paid and are continued to be paid. That's what pays for the roads, the schools, and different things. And I don't know when the rents ceased sometime on 1970 or so, but the rates, I think maybe the rates ended that time also. I'm just not sure.
No, they're still charging rates here. And in fact, what they're doing, the situation is even worse than that. Rates aren't actually paying for anything. What's happening the rates now is the rates are not even paying the interest on the loans all of the local county council and local governments have built up over the years. And believe it or not, I've been told by an insider that practically all of the county councils in this day and age in modern Ireland, folks, get this now, they're all operating on an overdraft facility, which is ludicrous. They don't actually have a budget, Chris or Billy. They have an overdraft facility. In other words, they're already all maxed out and are operating on overdraft. So any rates you pay as a business is only going towards the interest payment only, and it's not enough.
Yeah, we're in the same situation in the States, and it's only a matter of time. I think very, very sure. I think a finger snap in terms of historical time. I think the world is away from the people just walking away from those so-called debts. They're not their debts. They're debts created by the criminal 1%, the banksters, for their own benefit, and they managed to hook some people, and then the governments, the corrupt governments, bail out the banksters instead of the people that they hooked.
Absolutely.
That's going on everywhere. But maybe Ireland might be one of the worst hit by it.
Well, I think it's interesting because a minister, a so-called minister, a provisional minister, Alan Kelly, recently made some comments, Billy and Chris, I don't know if you heard them. He said essentially he was finding it very difficult, God love him, to try to help the homeowner because he basically said, I haven't got the article here in front of me, so I'll paraphrase. He said that the Constitution, the 37 Constitution in his eyes, was preventing him from doing same. Did you see that, Billy?
I did.
Now, the Master of the High Court, well, just on that, the Master of the High Court, in another article in the newspaper, has absolutely roasted him for it. He has roasted Alan Kelly for it in an article. Edmund Honohan is the Master of the High Court here. And right. I believe he's actually a decent man, Billy, even though he knows where he is. But I think he is a decent man. But he absolutely tore strips off Alan Kelly for even suggesting that.
But, Vincent, can I just refer to the Sovereign Constitution?
Please do.
Of Vaughan's Hotel, Republic of Era, IRB. To the Most Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, we the people of Ireland dedicate our constitution and beg the guidance of the Holy Spirit that it may, in consonance with thy divine will, and contribute to the greater glory. Amen. This constitution shall be the constitution of the Republic of Ireland, proclaimed in arms on Easter Monday, April the 24th, 1916, and established by the will of all the people of Ireland on January the 21st, 1919,
And the first article, the sovereignty of the nation is inalienable. It is therefore not within the competence of any generation of the people to surrender that sovereignty which each generation holds in trust for the nation. The question of surrender of national independence may not be submitted to an electorate. Subject to the fundamental principles, is hereby declared that all authority in Ireland, legislative, executive and judicial, and all powers of government are derived solely under God from the people of Ireland. These powers are inherent in the people alone by virtue of their sovereignty. They must be exercised in accordance with the principles of liberty, equality and justice for all. Any legislation not in accordance with these principles is hereby declared to be null and void. And then Article 10, which I shall read. The land of Ireland belongs to the citizens of Ireland and to them alone. Doesn't that make it fair? And I've said about people, if somebody comes to take your house and they take it, slate by slate, brick by brick, you still own the ground. You still own the land. And you should tell them that. And you should stand up for your sovereignty, that those volunteers and citizens' army and all those people that went out, coming among the Fianna Fáil and Éireann, went out to give you that benefit. And you should stand up and demand it from your whether it is banks, politicians or judges, you should demand it. And you should ask the judge, what constitution has my case been heard under? And you have a right to the sovereign constitution. That's where all the land of Ireland was divided on, that sovereign constitution, and the land was that was up beside Vaughan's Hotel at the time.
The Land Commission. The Land Commission.
Yes, that's where all that came out of in the end.
I believe there are...
District Board first, and then it went on. But that's where all those landlords' estates, and that's the legislation. There it is there for you. The land of Ireland belongs to the citizens. That's by the will of all the people of the 1918-32 county election. Every little farmer, and what Chris is talking about there, the 35 acres of land and the piece of bog for your fuel, that was all the Land Commission. That's all Irish Republican Brotherhood and Fenian Republican Brotherhood. That's where it comes out to. That's where your sovereignty is.
Well, I've told you already, Billy, I know people in Stamullen, and they still hold their land from the original 1919 land division.
Yes.
To this day, yes. They still hold it.
And all land is held from that. And that's what it's held from, because it's the will of all the people. And anyone to try and change that, I've just read it out to you. You cannot do it. You can't even put it before the people.
I think Chris wants to come in there. Sorry, Chris, go ahead.
In the end of the truth here must be now stated clearly that while the Irish Republican Brotherhood and those laws maybe had an influence, it was under British rule that the Congested Districts Board was set up. And that later on, under Irish freedom, that was changed to become the Irish Land Commission.
But the
British who actually started repatriating their own landlords out of Ireland and dividing up the land. That might have been influenced by what you're describing, but that was under at the time.
And Chris, that land commission was stopped beside Vaughan's Hotel in Parnell Square. Well, that's where it started from. And all those judges, I mean, I knew a lot of those land commission judges, and they had full power. And that's what it was about, taking back the land for the people to benefit, rather than all the food being taken out of the country. And now all the assets being taken out of the country for the Crown forces, for war set off around the world, and we're dying of starvation in the country. And they're the facts, Chris.
Yeah, indeed they are. In fact, according to British Member of Parliament, at the time, it was also used to feed the slaves of the British planters and throughout the Caribbean.
Yes, it was still being used as a form of oppression to others. Even though it was feeding them, they were using it to feed those they had already oppressed.
Exactly. So it's and that was a William Cobbett. By the way, if you ever, any of your readers there, every your listeners ever get a chance, William Cobbett, C-O-B-B-E-T-T, William Cobbett, Member of Parliament, was a really honest, decent Englishman who saw what was going on in Ireland, tried to change it, saw what was being planned for Scotland. Yeah, I think he headed that off and said that if the British government succeeded both in Ireland and Scotland, that the English people themselves would be doomed.
Well, I would agree, and I would suggest that, in fairness, I think a lot of people forget to mention this, particularly in Ireland. I mean, I know an awful lot of wonderfully decent English people, and they are equally oppressed. In fact, I would suggest even, in some cases, even more oppressed than the Irish by their own government. I'm seeing English people being evicted from their homes and starved, and you know, they have a bedroom tax over there, Chris, that if you've been living in a house for 30, 40 years and you now can't pay this bedroom tax, they are evicting the people.
Wow. Shocking.
Absolutely crazy. Ludicrous.
But there is Michael D. Higgins appointing judges to evict people here. Is that what he's doing? And they're the facts.
They are indeed.
Meanwhile, the wealth of Ireland used to be its food crop production. Now it's that, but it's also its offshore oil and gas, and it's as a means now of taxing another way of milking the people through the water charges. I hope that the Irish people do stand up and put down that and get the benefit of their own.
In fairness, I will say this, Chris, I'm not one. I'm personally not one for standing on the line and protesting. I have a different methodology, but I believe pretty much, I think I'm safe to say this, that the water charges debacle seems to have been crushed by popular support for all the water protester groups.
Great, wonderful.
As far as I'm aware, that's essentially gone. I mean, they're still arguing about it. I mean, you know, they're trying to say now, oh, the EU insist, you know, but no, I can't see that happening.
And Vincent, there's one thing too that, you know, when the Queen was here, and, you know, I talked there about a truth commission coming out with all that information. And, of course, that's been scrapped. And, as you know, the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process that was founded down the University of Limerick, that's now been scrapped and the money all being pocketed by politicians. And the Queen said here that she wished things were done differently. The Queen will be 90 years of age, coming up in June or wherever it is. And we wish her well. But things should be done differently and have to be done differently from now on. The truth has to come out, that truth commission, that her visage, and laying the wreath in the Garden of Remembrance, which Vaughan Sertel looks out onto. And that's the reason why it's there. And she gave assurances, and the House of Lords gave assurances to the Irish Republican Brotherhood when the Queen came here that truth commission would be enacted. It was predicated on that, the her visit. And now they've scrapped the whole thing because they don't want the truth to come out in our 100th anniversary.
Well, I don't know, Billy. While they own the mainstream media and they own the magazines and the newspapers, etc., they don't have a handle on the internet yet, no matter what they say. And the internet is bigger than all of them put together. And we have been repeating this message here, as you know, for the last 7 odd years.
You have indeed. You're the only one, Vincent, that's doing it.
No, in fairness, I don't think we are anymore. As I said, I mean, I hear so many people use the terminology we've used down through the years from many other websites now. So it is starting to spread and it's ubiquitous almost. You know, I hear regularly people using the terminology the Royal Oireachtas. I regularly hear people using some of our other terminology that we have used down through the years. So I'm seeing it spread. As I've said to you, I don't think that, you know, this genie is not going back into the bottle.
Well, you've always said
it's
that, Vincent, and that's the one thing. But, you know, when I was growing up, and as you know, I was told, you know, by the executive of the Irish Republican Brotherhood that the provisional government would have it completely airbrushed out by 2016.
Well, they haven't.
And thank God I lived to see the day last Easter Monday.
Also, I use the term inverted commas, Sir Bob Geldof made some quite disparaging remarks recently. I call him Gob Sell-off. But he made some very disparaging remarks comparing the men of 1916 to jihadi suicide bombers.
That's dreadful. That is scandalous.
That's the level where, you know, and supposedly, an Irishman, supposedly.
I want you to think that RTE and the millions they've spent on this and all these programs that they bought and everything else and got all, and all these journalists who've written papers and papers and papers, that they would have once made one son. They never contacted the Irish Athenian Republican Brotherhood once.
Well,
and that's
what's
our
interesting.
Keep on repeating, and that's our 1916. Why couldn't they say that?
Well, it's
Why
interesting, Billy, that they kind of, RTE basically claim you don't exist, yet we have other channels like TG Cahir, and they had you on, TG Cahir, they didn't directly have you on, but they mentioned you and they showed you standing up at the Bank of Ireland court,
I
addressed you as the president of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. So, absolutely. But what I'm saying, mainstream media, they do know you exist, yet, and you are, I mean, I've always said it, you're a very dignified and a man with you are an absolute born diplomat. I don't know if you were trained or how it came about, but you were very diplomatic. And even there tonight, you had the good grace to even say, you know, if herself hits the 90th, and well, good luck to her and best of health to her.
I do say that, and I mean that. And
absolutely.
Look, we're not against English people or our neighbours or anything like that. But we want to have the truth come out there. That we should. You can't keep going on with lies and deception all the time.
No.
And I find Michael D. Higgins unbelievable. At least he said, apparently last in the Mansion House, you know, we should go back to 1919. And yet he's never come to the 21st of January. He's never recognised the Irish Fenian Republican Brotherhood. And yet he's going to all these commemorations. And our proclamation is to be read. He never said, look, that's the Irish Republic. They wrote that. You know, and why can't he say that?
And I would also add in there, and I mean, I know, you know, this is, it's not hearsay from you, it's hearsay from me. But what that comment he made to you with regard to sovereignty was quite disturbing.
Yeah. The effing sovereignty, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that was, you know, it just shows you what where we're at. And it's time for the 100th anniversary. And I would like to thank the Garda Síochána. And I made it quite clear to everybody who was commemorating our 100th anniversary that we wanted no violence, we wanted no placards, we wanted a dignified parade from everybody. And all this, there was a lot of trouble beforehand with people who wouldn't honour those people. That's our tricolour flag, that's our proclamation. And we keep all that in trust for the sovereign citizens, which all those people are. And we said to the Garda Síochána, and I must thank as Chief Superintendent Pat Leahy, who was terrific. And we put up that's our slot from 11 to 12. We always get the Irish Republican Brotherhood, and we march from Vaughan's Hotel down to the GPO. Now, everything was done to stop us. As I said about the tricolour flag was taken down, and we couldn't. But anyway, the Garda Síochána were most dignified, and they were so helpful to us. And as you know, we were told we would never be allowed to march down on Easter Monday, our 100th anniversary, but we did, and it was very. And there was nothing. It was a lovely day. There was a lovely atmosphere.
Well, they're really trying to push down hard on Garda Síochána at the moment, Billy. I've been told that some members of Garda Síochána are having such a tough time paying their bills that they're actually sleeping the night in their cars outside the Garda stations because they can't afford accommodation close to where they've been assigned. And on top of that, many of them now, and I would say unfortunately, it seems many of the decent ones are being paid so little they feel they are forced to leave on Garda Síochána. And I feel what's going to happen is many of the good decent people in there, and there are good decent people in there, some of them are in my family, and they are being forced to leave. And eventually they, of course, will start to rehire with a new wonderful package. And I can assure everybody listening, they're going to hire people from all over the EU who will have poor English, no understanding of our constitution or our sovereignty. And it's going to be really bad. And I would urge as many of those who can possibly put up with those poor conditions to please put up with them. If you're a decent member of Garda Síochána, I'm asking you, please hang in there if you can, for our sake.
And it's hard to say, Vincent, that, you know, when they were at Vaughan's Hotel on Easter Monday, and I was explaining to them, their first day of duty was the 21st of January 1919. Seven strings IV Irish volunteers. They came out of Vogel and Ahern. And most of the Garda Síochána don't know that. And they were very proud to know that. Then eight strings IV is Vogel and Ahern, the Defence Forces. And I thought it was a shock. I wrote to Enda Kenny's office. I wrote to the Secretary General of the Vogel and Ahern. I wrote to, as I said, Pat Leahy, Chief Superintendent, that Vaughan's Hotel would be washed and cleaned up, where the state was founded, the Sovereign Republic of Éire, where the Sovereign Republic of Éire is Dáil Éireann governed by the will of all the people on the 1918-32 county election on the 21st of January 1919. It's a disgraceful building, and for them to see, and you think that the volunteers, Ogle and Ahern, who go all over the world and take our tricolour flag without our permission and carry eight strings IV Irish volunteers on their buttons and carry sovereignty. And they wouldn't even clean the Vaughan's Hotel for the 21st. And what about, and I must thank Bartle Darcy for opening up those tunnels up to Vaughan's Hotel. We could not have won the 1918-32 county election. We could not have won the War of Independence without those tunnels. They were crucial. And my, because Tom McGuire, my granduncle, that did all that. He was, I told you, sent to Calcutta in India. And India's independence came out of Vaughan's Hotel. President Geary, the fourth president of India, he was here in 1912 studying law. I met him as a child. And their flag is our flag, green, white, and orange, turned the other way. And their constitution is our sovereign constitution. They didn't have what we had. We had the GA, it was the backbone of our independence. And with the help of God this year, we have a set of medals with the sovereign seal on it. The medal that the GA have today, it's only a GA medal. It's not an All-Ireland medal. They took off the sovereign seal and air off the medal without any permission. That's our organisation.
Well, just while we're on that subject, Billy, if you don't mind, I am going to be talking about this in depth afterwards, but just to give people a little heads up as well, they're operating another census here at the moment from a UK-based company, CACI, I believe, and they were also involved in I don't know whether it was certainly there was very negative treatment of prisoners, apparently, in some of their other associates around the world. And they're attempting to perform a census here. There is no indication on the census document that it is even from a provisional government, never mind a sovereign government. There is essentially the census logos, and that's it. There is no sovereign seal at all. They're using these census workers. I call it the senseless. They've already attempted to call here, seemingly. And what they're doing now, Billy, they're doing something different now that they didn't do in the past. They're knocking on your door, and if you open up and begin to discuss with them, they seek some information from you, and they use that to generate a unique number. And they will attempt to prosecute you based on that number and that admission or whatever testimony you give them on the doorstep. I believe they're recording as well. I haven't got that confirmed yet. I'm told they're recording your audio as well. The reason I'm talking about this, Billy, is apparently on the last census back in 2011, I didn't feel inclined to include myself in it because I remember calling you and asking you, hey, Billy, are you running a census in Ireland? You said no. So I therefore didn't feel obliged to engage. Seemingly they had court case after court case in my absence because I didn't feel like attending. I didn't feel it was anything to do with me. Seemingly a court fine of €25,000 was put out there for me, seemingly, as I said, and also a six-month jail sentence. They came to my home in the boys in the blue suits on about 12 or 13 different occasions, and I simply didn't interfere. I allowed them to uphold the Constitution from where they were at, even though it was the 1937 one. They did, and they left. As far as I know, I am the only one whom they attempted to prosecute and all that, and I had nothing to do with them. I simply remained, I would say, as a sovereign individual, and I didn't interact with them. I'm not trying to brag or anything like that, folks, because it was I'm going to be honest, it was a horrific ordeal for my family to have to endure. My wife was very upset by them on numerous occasions. They stopped her in her car. They tried to tell her she was in possession of a deadly weapon, being the car itself, all in an effort to try to give paperwork to her, hoping she would give it to me. You know, we had to put up quite a bit of, I'm going to say, intimidation and oppression. And I want all of those individual men and women to know I hold and I bear no ill will towards any of them. I understand they were doing their job as they saw it. But I would also like to thank them because at the end of the day, they did uphold the oath they made to the 1937 Constitution, be it as it may be. But they did uphold it, Billy. They did not bash down my door and arrest me, etc., and haul me off to a jail cell, because I understood it was a civil matter. There was no crime committed. Had it been a criminal matter, of course, they don't ask questions. They just kick your door in. Now, I'm only saying that because a lot of people are going to have these census workers apparently knocking on their door again, and I'll be going into that in further detail later on in the show.
Right. What happened to the census years being one, the decennial, every 10 years ending on one?
Well,
1921, 31, etc.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure about that. This is supposedly, they've said in the papers, interestingly, this is the 25th census. Now, of course, they're counting from the first census operated by the Crown, I think in, was it 1836, that they're counting from. And yet they still say this is the 25th census. Now, to me, that's saying, you know, the silent end of that sentence is under the Crown.
Yeah, this should be, if it's 25 censuses, that should be 250 years.
Right.
Strange.
Yeah.
It is very strange. But Vincent, you said that that we weren't to stay on very long. So are we over our time?
No, you're fine. You're fine. Yeah. I say that hoping you won't take up the whole show.
Well, don't mention the half, because if you mention the half to me, the whole night is gone.
Well, I know that too. No, but I mean, I was hoping to get a bit more from Chris. I was hoping to hear a bit more from Chris, actually.
Yeah.
Chris,
and his new book. Get him on his book.
Absolutely, absolutely. Chris, can you maybe
Chris,
talk
are you listening?
Yes, I am. I'd like to also mention that our group, the Friends of Irish Freedom, are holding a function on the last Sunday of April this month, which is closer to the actual date. It's not the Easter Monday, but it's closer to the date in terms of the calendar. So that's when we're holding our
function. The 24th.
Yes. So yeah, well, within a couple of days of it. So that's what we're doing. And it's all established. We'll be having a nice time, and we'll be reporting on the prisoners being held there today in what Longcash now called McGabbery and in Port Leash.
Well, it was great to see that I met Sean O'Neill, and he was out of McGabbery, and it was great to see him. And the poor man has cancer in that, and he did the Tom Clark Memorial on Easter Monday in Limerick, and it was great to see him. But I met him, and I was going in for the read on the Thursday previous to that, and he was in McGabbery. And that man is an elderly man with cancer. And all he was doing was selling those papers up there, Shir Shanua. And I don't think that's any offence. And I can't understand it. You know what's going on.
Sorry,
you know,
just a correction there. It was 1841 was the census. Just to correct that there. Sorry.
I see. Also released recently was Michael McKevitt. He was framed by a combination of MI5, the Irish Garda Síochána, and the RUC. I attended the trial.
You did? Because I was there as well.
Yes, we didn't get to know each other.
Never met, but we...
No, he's released, and he served from 2001. He was convicted in 2003, and then was held until, I think, last week, I think. But in any event, he's out. We visited him a few months ago when we were there. We visited Port Leash. It's just one more atrocity, one more example that the Irish people have been taken over by their own enemies. And because we watched that framing take place in the special criminal courts on Green Street, and it was shocking to see a man who, if the laws were obtaining in the United States, would never have been outside of a prison. Introduced into that trial was an affidavit by the New York State Police identifying the main witness in that trial as a lifelong criminal. And most of his so-called testimony was, I can't recall, I don't remember, et cetera, et cetera. And it was shocking that that was allowed to pass. And the only truth, the one piece of truth that he did tell was to say that he was left alone in Ireland for a while by FBI agent Patrick Buckley, that because Buckley flew to the 1996 Olympics in Atlanta, Georgia, where he and his fellow FBI agents performed Buckley's specialty. They framed an innocent for a bombing at the Atlanta Olympics. So there you have the specialist in crime within the FBI participating in the framing of a patriotic Irishman, Michael McKevitt. It was shocking to see, and we witnessed it, and after it was all said and done, with the three judge panel, no juries are permitted in that courtroom, and all one can say is, why not?
Absolutely.
And it was almost 200 years to the week previously, 200 years since Robert Emmett was framed in that same courtroom by Judge Norbury. And
wow.
in his speech from the dock, Robert Emmett said that the jury had been subverted before they were even impaneled, it was a setup. But poor Michael McKevitt didn't get a jury at all.
No.
So 200 years, there is a result of so-called sovereignty in Ireland. There is no sovereignty. there's a government there, but the people are temporarily, their sovereign has been taken away from them. They'll have to reclaim it.
Well, I think what's again, it's, I mean, the idea of they claim it's for state security. They never mention which state. You know, they use all this terminology, and if you try to get to the end of it, you'll end up going in circles. I've tried. I've called them many times and asked them exactly what state do they mean.
It's almost always to cover up state crime.
Yes.
They don't want to be not alone embarrassed. They don't want to have their crimes exposed.
Well, you see, this is why I like for people to hear us ring them and say, which state precisely and exactly are you referring to when you say X, Y, and Z? And they have great difficulty. What I've done, Chris, I've put a link to your book, Ireland 1845 to 1850, The Perfect Holocaust and Who Kept It Perfect by Chris Fogarty, second edition. I put a link to that in the chat box, folks. How is the sales of your book going, Chris? Or have you get? Are you getting positive feedback? Or how is that going?
Absolutely beautiful. People are calling for me everywhere. In fact, one chap just emailed me 2 days ago saying that he had contacted John in Dublin and got another 5 and just to distribute to his friends and was going to be getting another batch of 5 shortly. Here in the States, it's doing very well. I'm going forward with another printing. But I must say, a man to whom I gave the e-book preparation developed leukemia some 7 or 8 months ago, and I can't take it away from him lest it be perceived as a prognosis to his health. So I'm kind of hoping that things work out soon. But that's the ebook is held up temporarily, but the printing of the others is not. It's going very, very well. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. And Billy, I don't know if you want to. I noted again on the day outside the GPO, Harry and Christina, and you know, I recognise almost all the faces there that day. They did very well, very dignified, integrity. All those words spring to mind. You know, and I believe, well, I know you probably don't want to get into it too much and you probably don't want to name names, but I believe there was a little bit of somebody attempting to cause a little bit of argy-bargy.
There was, and the name of the man was Christy Burke, and he was Lord Mayor of Dublin, and he wouldn't allow the Irish or Fenian Republican Brotherhood into the Mansion House, you know, on the 21st of January. And it was sad, and Molly O'Reilly's daughter was there in a wheelchair. Our Scots was from 11 until 12, and always the Irish and Fenian Republican Brother are always given that last slot, you know, before 12 o'clock to read the proclamation and raise their tricolour flag and read the Sovereign Constitution. But at 11:45, this group arrived, and we had read our proclamation and the Sovereign Constitution at that stage. And this man said, this is Molly O'Reilly's daughter who put up the flag, and she wants to lay a wreath. And she didn't look very well, and she was in a wheelchair, and an elderly lady, lovely lady. And we had 15 minutes, and I said, well, you can have our 15 minutes to lay the wreath. And then he proceeded to get on the phone. And I said, well, look, we don't have much sound, because our piper, Archie, who's a wonderful piper, he was to play... We had to move out, outside the GPO to see the tricolour being raised by the defence forces. We weren't allowed to do it. And he was to the public, Ron Levine is what we wanted. So he was on the phone, and I said, excuse me, I said, but you won't have that much time to lay the wreath. You know, can't you lay the wreath? And there was a man there, an elderly man, holding our tricolour flag. And he said, shut up, you. So then they started reading the proclamation. They were dressed up in this common amon and that sort of thing. And they read the proclamation. And then he said, we're waiting for somebody. Somebody's late. And who was it? Christy Burke. I never met Christy Burke in my life. And he came in and the tricolour and our proclamation. And he wouldn't allow it being read in the Mansion House when he was Lord Mayor. And yet here he was. I mean, it was pure hypocrisy. And out at the other side was the 2016 Commemoration Committee coming down, and they were just at the GPO just behind us. And, his piper, then they read the proclamation, and we moved out with our piper. And the piper said, he said, Mr. President, he said, I can't play, the pipes when the other piper is playing. He was playing a lament. And, I mean, they could have waited. But then the minute they saw... Valinch and his group of 2016, he just disappeared. I mean, he hijacked the whole thing. for the 100th anniversary. And he could have caused, I mean, the last thing we wanted to see, and we said that to the guards of Shikana, who were very helpful. We did not want to see a fight when the tricolour flag was being raised up at the GPO. And that's what would have happened. I mean, Christy Burke, he said to me, I never met Christy Burke in my life. Shut up, you, he said. And so I just said to him, look, don't do anything. Don't say anything. Don't start a fight. And that was the only thing that happened all day. You know, and it was a very dignified commemoration. But why he did it, we don't know, just to cause a fight and to cause trouble.
But it didn't work, Billy. That's the important thing. It didn't work.
And the Garda Síochána were so delighted. It all went off according to plan. And I didn't hear of anyone being arrested. And nobody came in with old placards or, you know, desecrating the sovereignty or the tricolour flag. And the and Arbor Hill was a lovely ceremony as well. And everybody was so happy. And there was such goodwill and everything there. It was really lovely to be part of it. And I'm delighted that I have seen the 100th anniversary, which I've always been told and warned all my life that the provisional government will have it airbrushed out by 2016. Well, they didn't.
And well, as I said, really, and I've said it for many years, Billy, for me, the most important year is 2019.
Yeah, that's me. I don't know whether I'll be around for that.
Oh, you will.
But anyway, you will. But anyway.
See that both of you are sort of the light leading the way to the true dawn of the country. These have been very, very dark times in terms of the state of education of the people. But through your radio show, Vince, and your efforts, Billy, you have educated, maybe not millions, but many, many thousands of tens of thousands of people, and things are on the right track. We're not out of the darkness yet, but you're the brightest lights out there right now.
Oh, well, I really appreciate you saying that.
Thank you very much. Criticism we get.
Well, I'd agree with you. I would agree with you, Chris, because what we're trying to do, of course, is we're trying to really get people to focus on peaceful, passive solutions. No aggression. We are not interested in aggression. Never will be. And the only way to do that is to, knowledge, actual knowledge, education, understanding, and, you know, being patient with one another. I mean, quite regularly, you know, we have to be patient when people get, because people get very upset when they hear some of these things, understandably so. It's not easy for somebody to have lived 30, 40, 50, 60 years thinking one thing and then finding out that, in fact, the exact opposite is what's happening. It's very difficult for people to cope with that.
It's a very painful experience mentally.
Absolutely.
There's a rejiggering of tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions of little components, synapses in the brain, that all of that has to be rejiggered, and it's quite painful.
Well, I don't mind saying it here. It was very difficult and painful for me to realize it.
Yes.
I was absolutely stunned. The first interview I ever did with Billy, and I'm sure Billy probably remembers too, but afterwards, I had to sit down on my own in a room for about 15 minutes just letting my brain cool down. It was like I had been electrified.
Yes, yes.
But Vincent, you always said solutions, and that's the key. You find solutions to problems.
That was Harry. That was Harry's influence. Harry was always solutions. And, you know, that's why I'd like to, you know, tip of the hat to Harry.
And John.
And John, absolutely. And Christina and everybody.
Do either of you or your listeners perhaps know of a Mark Coleman who used to be on, I think it's Newspeak, I think might have been the Dublin radio show. He had me on a few times, and he lost his job shortly after.
That's right.
And I'm hoping that he didn't suffer to or his family too badly, and I'm hoping that maybe he got connected up somewhere else. And if not, maybe one of your listeners maybe would know of a slot for him. But he's a truth teller at a time when the big lie is riding high.
I remember Mark Coleman. Mark Coleman, was it?
Yes, Mark Coleman.
Yeah, I remember the name all right. I'll look into that, though, see how he's doing.
But, Chris, there's one thing that we would love you to be able to do, because you have the influence there in America. And I've always asked Americans, where are you getting your sovereignty from? And, of course, as far as the Crown of England is from, the Crown of England, who's getting it from us, the Hawk, in the sovereign government of 21st of January 1919. But I do think that, you know, now is an opportunity for the journalists to come out and to, you know, ask the Crown, and asked David Cameron, he said the people are in Britain are sovereign. How can they be sovereign and subject at the same time?
It's impossible. It's the equivalent of saying you're a free prisoner. It's the same thing. It's an oxymoron. It's nonsense. Yes. It's nonsense. It's gibberish.
But surely Americans should take that up. And if they took it up, you'd have it in. We get no, as you know, nobody ever mentions the Irish or Fenian Republican Brotherhood. We haven't been mentioned in anything. But surely that's an important question after 1155, that is still there and still has been answered, and we can answer it. And yes, that the Crown, who said that she wished things were done differently in Ireland, and now is the opportunity at her 90th birthday to do something about it. As I said, the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process was predicated on a truth commission coming out, and the House of Lords liaised, the Earl of Hankin liaised with the Irish Republican Brotherhood, he was elected. And that hasn't happened.
That's just sparked a memory in my mind there, Billy. Does herself have an official birthday and an actual birthday? Am I correct on that?
I'm not 100% sure.
I think that's correct. Somebody in the chat box will probably know better than me there now and let me know if they can. I think
with
there might
her
be.
Her birthday, wouldn't it be a wonderful gesture to Ireland, who have been so, you know, we've always, all the people that died for Britain, for building their empire, all the food that was taken, all the suffering, the land that we've suffered with Britain, and surely on her 90th birthday that she would say Ireland, who, when she came, I mean, look at the wonderful, she got a wonderful welcome here. And not only that, but the Irish Republican Brotherhood guaranteed her safety, and it was just thrown down there. It's all, as you know, scrap now, and I think that's a shame. The whole peace process in that Good Friday Agreement, that's all scrap now. And I think, you know, the one that was to come out was a truth commission, with all that coming in and what happened. You know, all that has to come out. And I think we'd have good neighbours then. Neighbours can't be good neighbours if something like that is going on. You know, lies and deception. And we're better off to tell the truth and just respect one another, which we would do. We have nothing against British people, it's the fine people.
However, that Queen is the commander-in-chief of those criminal armed forces.
Absolutely.
That should be driven home at all times. If she's a truth-teller, she should do something about the following crimes, which have never been prosecuted. The Dublin-Monaghan bombings, the earlier Dublin bombing, the Bloody Sunday, the Ballymurphy massacre, the McGurk pub bombing and shooting, all, and there's many more, were atrocities perpetrated mostly in daylight by known perpetrators, named perpetrators, and they're not being prosecuted. So it is silly for the British government and the Queen to say that they are in favor of peace or that they made mistakes. They're not mistakes so long as they are a definite actions, and it is a definite action to bomb 33 people in Dublin and maim 300 of them. That is not negligence. That is crime, and it should be treated as crime, and it's not too late to arrest the perpetrators.
Is it a case, Chris, that, you know, that any people can't get closure and move on until they have the truth of the matter, no matter how gnarly and unpleasant it may be?
Of course. And it's important to know that the Dublin-Monaghan bomb cars, that their bombs that were placed within them were primed in the farmhouse in Glen Ann of Constable Mitchell. And the Glen Ann gang was named for his farmhouse, for the townland of his farmhouse. And the group called the Glen Ann gang murdered 128, mostly other people. Some of it includes the ones that crimes I just mentioned, but they murdered 128 people who were not even involved in politics, but they were seen to be Catholics, and they were seen to be prospering, and that combination was intolerable to the perpetrators.
And you see, again,
got a bit of work to do. She wants to claim to have justice and right on her side.
What I found quite interesting as I was doing my research, and I'm sure Billy will confirm this, is back in the day, Irish Republican Brotherhood had Protestant and Catholic membership.
Absolutely.
Yes. Part of that, I think, came from the fact that Presbyterians were almost as oppressed by the state church as Catholics were. So then they rebelled and they joined. It was almost entirely, very largely Presbyterians who joined with the Catholics. But then the British government were able to somehow turn turn them against Catholics, and then you, with the result that you know.
Yeah.
But the one question that I would like the Queen to answer, and that is, who paid for the Ulster Volunteers, and when they became the UVF Army, who paid for those German guns, the top-class German guns?
I think you've told most of the world by now.
Well,
you
might as well
say it again, because it's very useful
information. Well, I keep on saying this, I haven't got any answers.
I would suggest, Billy, there was more. I mean, I would suggest, because of the volume, I was trying to work out the finances at the time, and I believe that what was purchased would have required more funding elsewhere, other than what we know about.
You're absolutely right, but that's the basic of it.
Oh, absolutely, you made a very important
point. We know there were others. Look, if you read the Vaughan Sartell papers, which we gave, it was, I gave to the University of Limerick, it's all in it, verbatim, all that information is all in that. And I think, and I told you that they gutted Willibank, where all the, and Tom Connors, who was the carpenter, in the business at that time, because the original building, Maloney was the original carpenter that strengthened all the top of the, there were two valleys in that house, and it's open, anyone wants to see it. And Tom Connors told me that, Chuck Feeney had given all this money for the peace, reconciliation and prosperity process, and all that money was pocketed by the provincial government of Fine Gael and Labour. I mean, that's just scandalous. There's a letter there written by Hugh Coveney, and it's the most disgraceful letter I've ever read in all my life, and the betrayal, and all that should come out. And,
one of the first things I think that should be done along the line of what you're saying, Billy, is that Irish Academy has to be cleaned of its traitors. I know one professor who's teaching truthfully, but he must do so covertly. And that's a shame.
Didn't one of those professors, Chris, why didn't one of them say, that's the Irish Republican Brotherhood's proclamation, it's written on it for anyone to read it. And why couldn't they come out and say, that's their tricolour flag. When Thomas Francis Marr brought that flag, he was the Fianna Fáil around, it's over the Young Irelanders, and was adopted by James Stevens and John O'Mahony, the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood, as the national flag. And when it came with the orange nearest to the pole in deference to the Presbyterian people, and was ratified on the 21st of January 1919 under the 32 county election of 1918 with the green nearest to the pole. Why can't they tell us that information? So without that information, you can't understand 1916.
Well, the one that I knew who was telling the truth, his book received no peer reviews. It almost cost him his livelihood.
That is the weapon of choice.
He's got young children to feed. He cannot afford. And so he has to tell the truth as a professor within Ireland of the University of Ireland. He must tell the truth in little pieces and covertly to his students.
And, Chris, I went to meet down at the University of Limerick with Heather Humphreys, who's over the arts heritage in the Gaeltacht. I went down, I gave her all that information. I stayed, they were having lunch at the because, as you know, I lived down there at the University of Limerick, there's Willibank, that's where Willibank was, next door to where the White House is now. Willibank was the original White House there. And I waited for an hour for her to finish her lunch before she came out. She wouldn't meet anybody, but anyway, the people there said, she'll meet you because we won't let her out the door. So I gave her all that information, and she just snubbed me. And she's Presbyterian. And I couldn't believe it, because the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood, they founded the University of Limerick as a technological university, that young people would get a work ethos rather than academia. And there was nobody, so you're talking about 1950, when it was, when the idea of a university for there. And what a wonderful university it is. And yes, they won't tell the truth. And I think it is unbelievable that a university like that, or any university, and we got up to Galway's having something next Saturday and Sunday on 1916 and on sovereignty in the School of Law. And I'm hoping to go there on the Sunday. I'll ring them up tomorrow, because we weren't invited to it. But, I mean, Hayes McCoy, I mean, I spent my time as a young fella going up and down to the attic in Willibank, bringing down boxes. And that book that he's all the flags and that, I mean, I could nearly tell you all that, because I was all, that's how I got to know all those, for all those people and all those historians. I seem to be always running up and down in Willibank or in our offices in Artus Quay, bringing down boxes of of the Vaughan's Hotel papers, where all that information is. And yes, Tom O'Donnell knows where they are, and he took over from Brendan O'Regan, and he won't tell anybody.
Well, I think
Tom Connors told me three furniture van loads of papers and memorabilia were taken out of Willowbank before they got it.
Well, I think the way it's going to work is, again, as disinformation and understanding, more so than anything, settles in the mind's eye of the population, eventually, of course, you know, academia will, of course, be sitting there saying, well, I knew that all along. And, you know, I was, you know, that's the way it's going to be. We just know it. And I take the point Chris is making that, you know, they say, well, I've a family to feed. I too was in that situation at one stage. And then I was fortunate in one way. I was fortunate because my entire business evaporated overnight. So, I had no option other than to keep doing what I was doing. I had no zero. I went from a very nice income to absolute zero. I didn't participate in any social welfare or anything like that because I wouldn't associate with any of that. And it's been a real struggle here. But I do understand the mindset, you know. I've had to do private contracts where I can to maintain the household, et cetera, and my wife has too. It's been very difficult. But and I'm not trying to, you know, suggest anybody else should do this because it is extremely difficult. I would ask that people who can do to share the information, to share the perspective, do so peacefully, calmly, passively, and be nice to people. I mean, you know, I've noticed that, you know, some people get quite aggressive, Billy, when this topic comes up. And
well, I know.
And I do understand why. It's very difficult for people. It's because, and I understand it, it's really because people actually care. And I think we have to understand that even if somebody's getting very upset, it's actually because they care. You know, they might not be entirely correct in, you know, with the way we see things or our mindset. I mean, I've discussed Chris's book and some of the contents of Chris's book with some people, and they get very upset and uncomfortable. And they fall into the, I believe it's known as Stockholm syndrome. Essentially, do you know what I mean by that, Chris, that they start to make the excuses that the mainstream media has been putting out there? Oh, it was laissez-faire economics, Vin. You have that all wrong. Laissez-faire is what it was. And I'm saying, no, it couldn't possibly have been. That was the excuse, you know.
Yes. Yeah, when you send in the army, that's not laissez-faire.
Of course not. Yeah, but I do understand the difficulty, psychologically, as it were.
But how do they get control of Irish academia?
Pardon me?
How did they get control? How did the liars, the fabricators, get control of Ireland's academia?
They got a I would say, suggest initially it was through the education system, which was mainly in the hands of the church at the time, unfortunately. And there was reinforcement and, you know, pretty soon you realise to advance and to get promoted, you must adopt a certain attitude. And I would suggest people generally got along to get along type of thing. And it just grew out of that. And it's a very hard road for people to go back down to say, yes, I was wrong. I mean, I'm not expecting the likes of Dermot Ferreter or Tim Pat Coogan to hold our hands up and say, I was wrong. I should have been a bit more accurate and precise, but, you know, forgive me, please. I'm not expecting that. They should. I'd like them to, but I'm not expecting it. I have to say, I'm not expecting that. I hope future historians will be able to say the facts as they actually were. Historians are supposed to be like scientists. You know, they're not supposed to get creative with history. They're supposed to just spill it out factually.
As well. By the way, in Tim Pat Coogan, in his book, he quotes the bureaucrat, the British bureaucrats in Ireland at the time, accurately, but he tries to make the case for genocide based upon these letters. And that's, in my opinion, as silly as Nuremberg, trials of Nuremberg being based upon the entire evidence being Mein Kampf. Mein Kampf is an indicator, but it is not the crimes themselves. All they had to do was look at what the British army were doing in Ireland, and they would have it. That's the answer. But to refer to it as how they're doing is really a pity. It's really a shame. And the people have to get control of how their children, what their children are being taught. Their children are being lied to.
Absolutely. I do something every evening. I've been doing it ever since my children were very young, and I suggest all parents should do the same. Have the evening meal around the table. None of this TV dinner stuff, folks. Get your children around the dinner table. Have what I call a proper dinner. and talk to your children about what they've learned in school and gently over time correct them, you know. I've been doing it for years.
Bravo. That's just so great to hear, Vince.
I mean, loads of the guys on the website have been in my house for dinner and they know this goes on. I mean, even my children's friends know if they come to our house for dinner, I will be asking questions as dinner is going through. Sometimes I'll ask them about maths and, you know, their English and what they've learned in school about sciences and all sorts of things. But we always do it. We've been doing it since the get-go.
Bravo, bravo.
And they enjoy it. They actually enjoy it. I make it fun.
And how can we get more venues for Billy?
Well, that's something I'm hoping to start working on. I knew this particular year was going to be one of those sticky years for a lot of people. And I kind of made a decision last year that I was going to start really applying myself the year after this year. Because in my mind, as I said, 2019 is the big year for me. So I'm going to start working night and day, essentially, at the end, you know, of all the ceremonies for this year. You know, just I want everybody to get out of their system, whatever it is they have to get out of their system. And that's when I'm really going to start doing my thing.
You've been doing it all along. It's just wonderful. It's
well,
just
I'm really, I mean, I'm going to kick it up a notch.
Wow, you're an inspiration. So is Billy. And of course, you're not alone. There are others, but you're at the very core, at the very, very center of things. What Billy, the information that Billy is getting out is absolutely crucial to the whole nation, to the all Irish people.
Well, thank you very much for that, Chris.
Absolutely.
It's been lonely for us, but I must say Vincent has been great.
Well, you see,
Vincent has always supported me all along the line, even in the blackest days when things were, you know, everything thrown against us and that. He always stood up for us, you know, and it was great to have a voice out there.
Well, I'd say too, Billy, there's many of the other hosts here on People's Internet Radio and the membership and, you know, what they're doing out there. I mean, we've 3,500 members on the site and, you know, they are all out there doing their own thing. And I mean, you know, we have a very large English membership on the site as well. And they're wonderful people and they regularly have, you know, they're not always talking about, you know, Ireland and what's going on here. But they've used an awful lot of the information and perspective that we've shared with them to realize and to help, you know, spread this idea in their own land that, you know, there are easier ways rather than resorting to violence. You can, you can assert yourself peacefully and passively and effectively with, you know, certain understanding and, you know, passive language and comprehension of the other individual's position. That's real important that we understand the other individual's position. I mean, I keep saying to people, look, it's not the cop's fault when he stops you. He's been badly trained, perhaps. It's not the census worker's fault. Maybe he hasn't been given the full story, or she. It's not the individual in the post office. Until we spread this perspective wider to a wider audience, and we're doing it. I mean, and we are getting there, slow but sure, and it's steady, which I like. Slow and steady, I like. I don't like big jumps in sports. I never did like that. Because there was many occasions we could have had, you know, we could have built up the membership of the website here to 100,000 perhaps, you know, had we done certain things. And I always avoided doing that because I don't know if we could cope with 100,000 people on the website. So my mind was, well, if we have to do our best, all of us collectively, to educate ourselves first, so we have all the conversations, we get our mindset correct, and then we're ready to go to the next level. And, you know, if we have 2,000 people ready to educate, well, they can go and educate potentially another 2,000 people each. And then those people then can educate another. And before you know it, the world will understand it. You see, that's what I want to see, Billy. I don't want just the Irish people to understand this, or the English people, or the American people. I want the people of Earth to understand that the Proclamation of 1916 was speaking to every single living man and woman on the entire planet. I think that's why the Crown oppressed it so much, because they realised, well, if we let the Irish do this, what's to stop the Indians and the Australians and the etc. from doing the same thing?
They're sovereign people, sovereign citizens, that's what you are, and according to that. And what is going to be the consequence, you think, Chris and Vincent, of David Cameron, what he said, that people in Britain are sovereign? Are people going to say, well, if we're sovereign, we're going to stand up and be sovereign?
They've been robbed of their sovereignty, and the question, when will they stand up?
But isn't it funny, going to be a funny situation with that vote in for the European, whether they're in or out, that they're going to be sovereign, and they're under sovereignty of our sovereignty. I mean, the whole thing is unbelievable.
Well, essentially, they're going to try to keep Ireland in through the six counties, if my understanding is correct.
Yeah.
That's even if England, inverted commas, supposedly exits, the way the 26 county provisional government will be remaining in will be via the connection through the six counties in Northern Ireland.
Of Ireland.
Yes, that would be the only way I think they can do it.
What General de Gaulle said at the time, because I was there at all that time and I remember all the arguments, he would not allow Britain to join, which was the EC at the time, because they only had they didn't have a sovereign government, and only a sovereign government consists of the table in the European Union, and they only had this royal government and royal courts of justice. You can see it up there for anyone to read it. And they didn't have a sovereign government. They were relying on our sovereignty. They wanted to join Europe. That's why we were dragged into Europe. And was dragged in because our sovereign government is the 21st of January 1919. Always our people have been sovereign. You know, we're Celtic people.
Somebody asked me, Billy, to explain that to them exactly as you've said. And what I like to do is I like to give a little analogy to help people understand when I'm explaining things. And how I explained it was like this. I said, imagine if you're trying to do a deal with the Murphy clan. Maybe you're the O'Neill clan and you're trying to do a peace treaty with the Murphy clan. And only three quarters of them are represented. And they've made it clear that the other quarter are not represented. And that yet they're still trying to convince you that you're doing a deal with the Murphy clan. And you know, de Gaulle was essentially an O'Neill saying, well, either I'm doing a deal with the whole clan or I'm not. Which is it?
Absolutely. And that's what happened. And the extraordinary thing is that in August 1919, King George V, he declared Dáil Éireann to be an illegal assembly. So who'd this idea of a treaty? There was never a treaty signed in Ireland, nor could he sign a treaty. And also, his sovereignty comes from us. And how is he going to lose his own sovereignty? I mean, the whole thing needs to be, you need these people to come out and work out all that and say, look, King George V, he was wrong then. He saw that his sovereignty came from here.
Well, the Crown...
General de Gaulle saw them.
My understanding, Billy, is that the Crown can do no wrong, if you will, in that regard. And all they have to do, essentially, is what they've always done, which is very simple. When you look at the way the structure of how they operate with the Master of the Rolls, etc., down through time, all they have to actually do is to recognise the sovereign government. And that's it, essentially. It's a job done. But yes. Officially, once they recognise it, then that's it, job done.
Yes, but the whole, what happens, I mean, the Knight of the Garter, somebody told me the night that the Duke of Edinburgh was on that, and he was asked, what do you think of the Knight of the Garter? He said, it's pure madness. But he said, the British people like it, so we do it.
Hmm.
And, I mean, that is absolutely the fact. I mean, the Crown of England, it's unbelievable now what's going on. And that is going to have consequence here. If they pull out, we are lucky, as I said, that I've mentioned the five governments that we have in the Sovereign Republic of Ireland. That's the name of our state. That's what those volunteers did. And those four don't recognise it. But we, whether we stay in or whether we stay out, we have a sovereign government. But where is that going to leave Britain? Where is it going to leave the royal government and the royal courts of justice? You know, this is the question that has to be answered. And America has to answer it as well, because America depends on Britain for their sovereignty. You'll hear about the American Constitution morning, noon and night, but every time I've ever asked an American where you get your sovereignty from, they look at you as if you have two heads.
Well, I have heard actual audio recordings of judges in America telling the citizenry, the people, whoever were in front of them, not to mention that constitution in their courtroom again, or they'd put them into contempt, as in the American constitution. So clearly that's not operating over there, or at least it's not operating in a lot of the courtrooms over there.
No, we've lost a huge amount of sovereignty in our time, but what we now have is a corporate takeover.
Yes.
Of the government by bribery and the courts, perhaps by the same means. I'm not sure how they got the courts.
Well, it's clearly deceptive, Chris. Would you accept that a courtroom environment in America, if you were like a true blue American, as they say, you know, Joe Public Americana, going into a courtroom and you had a good working knowledge of the American Constitution and you go into a courtroom, wouldn't you be surprised for that judge to lean over from his glasses and say, don't mention that constitution in here, I'll put you into contempt?
it could very well happen. And there's a John Wilson who's trying to establish the same kind of sovereignty for himself in Australia.
Oh, I know John Wilson. I've spoken to John Wilson about 6 years ago, actually.
He's quite a man. He's still fighting the fight.
He
might lead the Australians into the light himself.
Seven years ago, in fact, was I think I was speaking to John.
But right now, here in Chicago, I know some people who retired from the police, Chicago police, who side with their fellows no matter if they're murderers. Even if they murder young black men on the street, cold blood, they still defend their fellow cops. And I ask, why would you allow the notion of having bullseyes painted on all policemen's backs, including your own, in order to stand up for the murderers among your group? Why not stand up for the law instead? And there's a real question. They see themselves as a I call them a criminal gang until they stand up and start supporting the U.S. Constitution instead of their fellow members in blue, especially the 1 or 2% who are murderers among them.
All right, Joe. This is very frightening, the whole thing. And I do think that, you know, the world needs sovereignty and sovereign citizens, and they need them to stand up and be counted.
And you see, what I want to make sure, Billy, part of what I'm trying to make sure is that people actually understand the concept of what it is. Because if people don't actually understand the concept, they really don't know what are they actually trying to achieve.
That's true.
Yes.
You know, because it's like me trying to say to everybody, you know, if I was to go around, for example, just saying to everybody blanketly, you know, a blanket statement, vaccines are bad, for example. If I were to just make that statement, and if people say to me, well, why are they bad? And if I can't explain why, I may as well not bother saying it in the first
place. That's true. Absolutely.
Yes.
You have to know.
You have to know your onions, as they say.
Yeah. And things fall into place then. You see that sovereignty is something, Vincent, as you know, you see it every place once you know what it is. And you see, and you can judge. You know the difference from right to wrong. And you know what's right and you know what's wrong. And that's a very basic. And everybody, that's inherent in every child in the world, and it's there for everybody. And of course, Vincent, you said, I don't know whether you're going to do it or not, but you said that you might play, because as you know, I only heard it once.
Oh, yes.
A few words that were said at the GPO.
I was going to finish with that tonight.
Were you going to finish with that?
Well, no, when we're finished here, I was going to play that, yeah.
Oh, and will you play it for me? Will you bring me and tell me?
Well, you can stay on the line if you want to hear it.
Oh, I thought I had to go.
No, you can stay over here.
Do you have a working telephone in your house now?
No, I still cut it off, and I have no broadband. And I could. The only way I could ring you was on Easter Monday in Dublin. There was a phone on O'Connor Street, but I missed you. I talked to Mary. But it's awful. I'm absolutely, they won't let me speak. And they won't, I don't have anything. I'm not against anybody, you know, and I'd love to see our sovereign government. That's all we want.
Oops, sorry about that. That was me just starting.
And Vince, I tried to reach you earlier today. Are your last five numbers of your phone 33309?
Yes, but I was away. I was down in Cork, so I didn't get back till late.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's when I sent you the first message. I was only back in the door.
I see. Okay.
I was down in the People's Republic of Cork.
Great people, too.
Oh, they're getting a good grip on that sovereignty. They're getting a good grip on it now, Billy.
And they are. It is getting on down there. And I must say, Mick Reardon is brilliant. You know, all the work he does down there, you know, there's a lot of people down there want to know. And now the new Secretary General of RTE is from Cork as well. And she might allow the Irish Republican Brotherhood, the Fianna Republican Brotherhood, to be on RTE. Okay. It'd be great.
Interesting. Well, how did that come about?
Sorry?
How did that come about?
She's the new one. I can find out her name. She's been announced. It was announced on the paper yesterday that there's a new Secretary General for RTE. It's the first woman Secretary General, and she's from Cork.
Well, we had a little conversation earlier today, Billy, and I suggested that potentially we're going to see the mainstream media now that they feel much of what the to-do, if you will, of 1916 is out of the way, that they were going to start focusing on the IRB and trying to give the IRB a bad name and try to twist history yet again. Would you have a comment that you'd like to make on that?
Well, they are. They just want to airbrush us out of everything, you know, and to see all the programs they made and the millions they spent for 2016. And for me, that was very hurtful. They never once mentioned the Irish Republican Brotherhood, Fenian Republican Brotherhood. It's written on the proclamation. Every place you look, you see our sovereign seals at harps every place. You see the sovereignty. You see every program. And not one historian or one of those people that were well paid to do all those programs mentioned that that was the Irish Republican Brotherhood. They put up their tricolour flag on the GPO in 1916, taken down by Dermot Lynch and kept. They never said the proclamation. That proclamation is written by the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood. They never said the sovereign constitution, the foundation documents of the state, and they couldn't mention it. Isn't that a snub? Isn't that a dreadful desecration of our sovereignty and of those people? I mean, it's pure hypocrisy. And to hear a huge, that is hypocrisy for Michael D. Higgins to go out and pretend that he's, I'm president of Ireland. He's not president of Ireland. He's the usurper president of the 26 counties is what he is. And those politicians and that were, you know, on the election. And RTE kept on saying that those politicians were being elected to Dáil Éireann. They're never been elected. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House.
That's right. I mean, he's
the Royal Dáil and the Royal Rothes.
He's used the term state visit once too often for my liking as well.
Yes, yes. By the way, would there be any chance that you'd be interested in interviewing Michael McKibben on your show?
Absolutely.
That would be very, very interesting.
I mean, I don't know if I'd have enough knowledge about that, the surrounding.
Chris would have it. Chris would
but
do
if,
it.
But if you're prepared to join, absolutely.
And I tell you, you'll get some program if you get yourself and Chris to do it.
If you're prepared to do that, Chris, absolutely.
Are you on for it, Chris?
Yeah, it would be a wonderful thing to do because that is one of those things that's crying out for justice. He was framed. Here's how it
but
worked.
But you were framed as well, Chris, weren't you?
Well, they tried to frame me twice on two different occasions.
Weren't you and Mary framed?
Yeah, we were both, in fact, jailed in a federal lockup for a while. We bonded out $100,000 for me, $50,000 for her, etc. But they tried to frame us, but they actually did frame Michael McKibben, and they did so based upon this experienced FBI evidence fabricator and perjurer. And I would very much like to see, even at this very, very late date, I don't know that Michael McKibben will want to do this. I'm just hoping that he would, because the people of Ireland should know what was done in their name. And that is shocking. That was a shocking abuse. And how it worked was that they didn't charge him with having anything whatever to do with OMA, because obviously their own people did OMA. So they couldn't frame him in a realistic way. But they charged him and convicted him of membership. And then they got the news media to say, without having any proof whatever, the lie that the real IRA bombed OMA. But the trial had nothing whatever to do with OMA. So the people of Ireland and the world have been told that Michael McKibben was framed for OMA. It never happened. They didn't dare do it because they bombed OMA themselves.
Wow.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It's shocking. It's actually shocking, Chris, to even think that could possibly be true. I mean, I know you're saying it's true, but I find it even shocking to find that, you know, that could even remotely be true.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. It's one of those things that caused so much pain to my head some years ago when I had to confront the reality, and it was so different to my earlier view of the world. But there's no mistake about it. This FBI agent locked Mary and me up in the federal lockup in Chicago and tried to send us to prison for the rest of our lives based upon an audio tape that he himself had criminally fabricated. Had he been charged and convicted for his crimes, there would have been no OMA, because within a year of his losing his case, it took 15 months of litigation for us to prove that his only evidence, the audio tape, was a criminal fabrication. Within a year, he was sent over to Ireland along with a lifelong criminal by the name of David Rupert, and they remained in Ireland from 1994 until August 15th, 1998, the evening of OMA. That was mission accomplished. That's when they left Ireland.
Well, I'm going to say this. One of my favorite educators in legal matters, believe it or not, is Judge Judy, who does, she's a famous, do you know Judge Judy, Chris?
I see her. I must say, I don't happen to like her arbitrary ways. She's a bit too abrasive for my...
She's extremely abrasive, but what I like about her, I'll tell you why I like her. One, she's really assisted me in my education and understanding contract law in particular. But she was over in Ireland and she made a comment, which I think we should point out now. She was speaking to Nora Owen on TV3's Midweek program, and she said, closed courtrooms protect two things, bad judges and bad lawyers. They also protect bad institutions that serve those courts, such as social services. She continued, they should be there as the norm. If you have specific exclusion, then you make it. And she was talking about TV cameras in courtrooms. She said every courtroom should have a TV camera in it.
Yes.
Should too. People should know and should see what's going on and have the right to. Sovereign citizens. Isn't that what sovereignty is about? That you're educated and you know what's going on. You can tell the difference from wrong to right and truth to knowledge. That's what it's about.
Vince, I'll email you Michael McKevitt's home telephone number. And if he's game, I would love to be useful. I did my best. Mary and I found, for example, we paid thousands of dollars to get, for example, the two copies that could be used in a trial of David Rupert's four bankruptcies, all fraudulent. And somehow they would have won the case readily. Just his bankruptcies alone would have freed Michael McKevitt if it happened to be in the United States. But the Irish courts are evidently even more corrupt than the American ones.
Well, and the point I'm making is that, you know, I think Irish people, we had this idea that seemingly, you know, the average Joe, that is, and Jane Doe on the street, somehow they have our best interest at heart, and therefore they have secret courts for a very good reason, that it's good that we shouldn't know. And I say, no, it's bad. We, the people, either we know what's going on and we know what's being done in our name, because even though they are a provisional government, the people are still voting for them, Billy, and they do have a form of a mandate in that regard, and they are still doing it in our name.
Yes, well, evidence that they do not intend, that the people are mistaken, that the courts are corrupt, it's largely theatre. Present and on the morning of before the trial would begin on Green Street, there'd be a line of limousines with sirens blaring and snipers on all of the surrounding rooftops. This is all theater, you see. Yeah. And because this is to try to make the point of terrorism. Now, we all know that terrorism is the word that the governments and news media give to those who defend against terrorism. They don't call the state terrorists, that they're often called the law, policemen.
Sure. I mean, that's been the way for, well, way too long. And I think this is the important thing. We're trying to, I mean, I can't say we're trying to change that, because we're not physically trying to change that. What we're really trying to do here is make people aware so that they can adjust their mindset, not even change their mindset or alter it completely, just adjust it with some simple realizations. I mean, that's what Billy gave me in the first interview, Chris, was a collection of simple, effective realizations that I could not deny. I mean, that's why I had to sit down for those 15 minutes and hold my head in my hands and go, how can I deny those truths? To deny those truths, I would have had to, I don't know what I would have had to, I couldn't, I just simply could not deny them.
Yes, it's, and of course you're not alone. I happened to visit the home of the, what was he was the padre, the chaplain to the first All-Ireland, Father Micheál O'Flanagan.
Okay.
Born in a bog outside Castlereagh in a little thatched house way back around 1890 or so. And he was the one who led the Roscommon election of 1918 during the time of the snowdrifts and everything. But anyways, there are so many Irish heroes, and I include you and Billy among them, Father Micheál O'Flanagan, not the O'Flanagan of Boystown, another man from not very far from him, Ballymore, County Galway. But that Father Micheál O'Flanagan gave his life. And by the way, his superiors within the church silenced him, they gagged him, and they moved him into godforsaken places as remote as could be from anywhere else. And they silenced him repeatedly. So for some reason, power tends to be corrupt. And, well, Lord Acton, of course, said it, an absolute power is absolutely corrupt. So I'm just hoping that we can have an effect here. But I certainly love to hear you and Billy, and I'll never get tired of hearing Billy repeating, because you know something? We need to have that driven home into our minds. We must be completely impressed, embedded within our thinking about the first Dáil Éireann. Absolutely essential.
Yeah, and I mean, thank you for the accolade, but I don't feel it's fully deserved. I mean, what I think, what I mean, to me, Billy is a hero, and Harry definitely is heroic. Christine is heroic. I don't feel what I'm doing is heroic in any way. I think most of what I was trying to do for the first couple of years was really just try and figure this out and to come to terms with it. And I just happened to do so down a live microphone.
Yes.
That's really, yes, you know.
It really had that effect.
Absolutely. It was stunning. It was stunning. And, you know, I've had such wonderful people help me in my journey. The wonderful Mr. T, of course. Harry, as I said, and Billy, and so many others. And as I said, I mean, I threw myself into reading legal texts and trying to figure out international law and sovereignty. And that's why, for example, when I realized that the so-called treaty can't possibly be a treaty. It does not meet the merits and the definition required to be an international treaty, the so-called 1922 exactly. treaty. It does not meet the mark. You know, it's like, you know, you need to be this tall to get onto this roller coaster. It's short. It doesn't cut the mustard. It doesn't pass the test.
Yes.
And anybody with half an ounce of intelligence should be able to figure it out. And yet they won't.
Dropped off? I think he has.
He has. It's just myself and yourself.
Yeah. And you know, I'm inclined to think that I'm going to have to take off here. And I'm very, very sorry, but I'm going to be emailing you and...
No, that's fine. I have 5 cents credit left before the call is going to drop. That's what it was. I was out of credit on the Skype account. Sorry about that. Billy, if you're listening. So yeah, that's what it was. Well, Chris, listen, thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us tonight. I really do.
A thousand times more from me to you. Again, thank you again so very much.
Just repeat your website there before we go.
www.irishholocaust.org. Irish Holocaust, all one word, .org. But I must say, there are a few inconsistencies, and what's more, the case is not fully made on irishholocaust.org. The case is made in the book. The title of the book is Ireland 1845-1850, The Perfect Holocaust, and Who Kept It, quote, Perfect, unquote.
Marvelous. And a wonderful read. And I highly recommend it, folks. A wonderful read. I'll say goodnight to you, Chris, before you unceremoniously get cut off by Skype.
Okay then. Bye.
Thank you. Good night. God bless. Thank you, Billy. Welcome back to peoplesinternetradio.com. Just me, folks, now for the next 45 minutes. Wow, time is really ticking on. I promised folks I'd get on to the census and a few other things. God, where will I start? Okay. First and foremost, thank you very much to Billy. Thank you very much to Chris Fogarty. Stunning as always. And wow, they were throwing compliments my way. I'm not used to that. I'm used to people getting aggressive and saying, "No, you're wrong, Vin." And I say, "Where am I wrong?" And then they stumble and stuff. But that was very nice, very nice. Thank you very much. I really did appreciate it. But yeah, so just me now, folks. If you want to call in, of course, feel free. The number is always Vincent Temp 1, VincentTemp, and digit 1 over Skype if you want to call in by phone. It's Irish number, so the international dialing code is 00353, and for Dublin you dial 1, and then it's 443309, 443309. If you feel like it, that's fine. If you want to throw something my way, something you know that's been on your mind, by all means. I still have about 7 or 8 different tabs open that I wanted to cover. I did cover some of them. I don't know if I'm going to have time to go into them all. Owen Harris in The Independent. What I'll do is I'll put the link in the chat box for you. And I won't talk about it too much, suffice to say. I'll give it a quick glossing over, as they say, because time is pressing. But do have a read of this, and also, when you're done, look him up. Look up Owen Harris on Wikipedia. Read the article again, and I think you'll see why I sent it to you. Just, it's at odds with itself, almost. And he's apparently at odds with himself. I find it strange. But census. Senseless. That's what I said I was going to talk about tonight. Is it the senseless or the census? Well, I don't object to even the provisional government in a 26-county knowing certain things to plan for schools and roads and housing and shopping centres and all that jazz. I really don't. However, they could pretty much establish via a census who's who and what's what without my cooperation, interaction, call it what you will. They already have enough information about almost every single one of us that they, quite frankly, they already know the answers before they ask the questions. You know, I don't think I'm stepping out on a limb saying that, particularly in this modern age of data collection For example, you know, I know people, I've said it to them, they will walk into a shopping centre, maybe somewhere, and I'll see a little pop-up on Facebook, oh, such and such has walked into the Blanchardstown Centre because they have Wi-Fi enabled on their phone and they had been there in the past and they had logged on to the free Wi-Fi on their Facebook app, and their Facebook app is telling me and the world and all and sundry where they are, or at least where their phone is, and most people more than likely have their phone with them 24/7. But, you know, and from that, you know, I hate to say it, but most people, all of their children have mobile phones. How many, you know, parents have, I think from, and I'm probably going to show my age here, but from the age of 12, at least, you know, most people I know, their children from the age of 12 all have mobile telephones, folks. And they are data mining tools, along with being, you know, the fact that their communication devices is secondary. It is absolutely secondary. You know, we find them useful for communicating with each other, of course, but essentially they are, it's a data mining tool in your pocket and you are carrying it everywhere. They have GPS locators, you name it. It's all in there. They can tune in and hear every word you're saying on that. You know, probably even if you take the battery out, who knows? And even if they're not tuning in directly to you, of course, they could probably tune in to everybody they reckon is around you. I mean, if they, you know, built up a profile about you, if they wanted to follow you or watch you from a distance electronically via the cloud, all they have to do, they don't even have to bug your phone, folks. All they have to do is listen into the telephones of everybody around you, all the people you know, your family and friends, and they will be able to establish where and when and what and whom you're doing, saying, going, etc. So this idea that they need, inverted commas, this census information, I find that to be senseless because they can already figure all this out. They already know. The questions they're asking, of course, in the census are quite, let's just say a lot of people have said to me that they find them quite invasive. They feel, you know, that's quite invasive. They're really approaching the edge, as it were, of privacy, or maybe even, you know, taking a giant leap above and beyond. Now, there are many ways of dealing with the census form. And I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. I do recall the wonderful Mr. T saying in the past, you know, hey, you can, you know, you can take the thing in if you feel the need and, you know, put a line through some of those boxes if you feel that way. Just a straight line, you know, through the box, or through all of the boxes if you feel, and not sign it, but rather in all caps, put the, what they would recognize, if you will, as the name. So, for example, you could put, if your name, if you were commonly known as Delamitri, for example, stick in Delamitri in all caps and send it back to them. And seemingly they won't have a problem with that, because apparently that's some form, I suppose, of compliance. Now, as I said, things have been changed this year. They're upping their game, as it were, by insisting on an interview beforehand. You know, before they'll hand over the document, they want to have some type of interaction. They're seeking testimony from you. And as I said, I've been told quietly that, you know, if somebody is a little awkward, that the next visit is definitely being audio recorded as well. Seemingly, the reason for that is that, you know, if you're being awkward, that these census workers, they get X amount, let's say they get, I don't know, whatever it is, maybe it's 500 quid a week, for example, 500 euros per week, and they are allotted X amount of houses to call to or whatever, but if they come across an awkward one, inverted commas, that is not willing to participate or, you know, divulge, they don't get their bonus. And their bonus, I've heard, could be wrong, but I've heard it's in around the 1400 region. So that would, I think that would give an incentive, shall we say, to the census worker, you know, to really feel hard done by and to maybe apply a bit of pressure, or rather as much pressure as he or she felt they could apply in such circumstance. So, you know, Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Hard to say. I will say this. I don't feel an obligation in that regard. Personally, I'm not advocating that you should or should not feel a similar obligation or lack thereof. What I'm saying is I'm just allowing you, as it were, inside my head for the moment. Inside me, I don't feel a particular or any obligation in that regard to divulge private family matters. As you've heard me say here many, many a time in the past, I only discuss private family matters within the family. And anything to do with me or my family, I classify. See, I am the one who classifies. You are the one who classifies what is private and what is not for you. I definitely decide what is or what is not private to me. So even, as I said, the 1937 Constitution, it's there. It's, you know, how you want to deal with it, I suppose, is your own business. But you can read a fantastic book, the direct literal translation, and you will really get an understanding. If you're English, I have found Outlines of Constitutional Law by Chalmers and Asquith. Fascinating read, shall we say. And I think you'll find the clues and you'll have the ability to join those dots. They're not actually enforcing or forcing this on you. It is voluntary. It is definitely voluntary. Everything they do or say is voluntary. The problem is, of course, is people don't seem to really have a good grasp on what or when or where or how they are voluntarily giving over or giving from themselves to this, surrendering and therefore volunteering to the system, as it were. So, for example, let me just run a little a what-if past you. If somebody raps on the door and you open up, before you've said a word, just opening the door, that guy or gal, they automatically assume you are willing, potentially, to participate in whatever it is they're offering, even if he's a brush salesman, a census worker, a window cleaner, or a member of an Garda Síochána. You've opened up. He rap, tap, tap on the door, and you opened up. Automatically, he's going to assume, hey, well, apparently, whomever just opened up here, you know, whoever stuck their head out of the tortoise shell, as it were, is willing to interact with me. That's number one. Now, if you're willing to interact, well, they're going to go, okay, well, you know, good afternoon, good evening, sir, madam, etc. I'm yada yada. He's going to give out his ID. Well, you know, he's going to, you know, hold up the little thing in his hand and try to convince you that he is something other than just a man or a woman, he or she. And he's going to, understandably, operate the program. He's just going to hit enter on the mental computer, and he's going to run the I am a census worker program. And he's going to start asking the questions, whatever they may be. Is it their fault? Perhaps not. Perhaps. Is it evil? I don't think so. I'd rather it wasn't that way, but seemingly that's the way people do it. You know, they feel that it's a good thing, I suppose. You know, they've accepted and adopted these ideas down through the years, and, you know, unfortunately, I suppose, they don't see that there's an option, because they've been told, you see, that there is no option. They've been told this is not a voluntary act. They say you're seeking their cooperation. Now, you're seeking their cooperation, the individuals, you know, that they're looking for the census information from, but there are consequences and repercussions, potentially, if they don't comply. They, of course, take this to mean that they can be, you know, a little bit, shall we say, insistent. They can be insistent. And they can be, quite frankly, they can be rude. You know, many people say, oh, they're quite rude. You know, some people have said they found it threatening. They don't see that they're being threatening. They've been told, listen, you're a census worker. You're operating under XYZ authority. Take no shit. That's essentially what they're told. You don't listen to any waffle or sovereignty or freeman on the land or somebody who says, I'm not part of your government. Or, don't listen to any of it. Disregard and ignore. That's what they're told, essentially. Disregard and ignore, and you keep pushing on. Don't forget your little bonuses, depending on it. €1,400 or whatever it is. That's a nice little bonus. And many of them have already begun to spend that, you see. They've already budgeted into their life. Oh, well, that's that new widescreen TV the missus was admiring. And if I get that for her, I mean, she's going to be happy, and therefore I'm going to be happy, and everybody will be happy, right? That's what's going on in their head. So If you don't want to deal with this, I'm not here to tell you how to not deal with it, because I can't, because you have to make your own decisions. I expect you to make your own decisions. I can't tell you what to do. I wouldn't want to tell you what to do. If you want me to tell you what to do, you're in trouble, because that's really what People's Internet Radio is all about, folks. We realize and understand that everybody is an individual that makes up their own mind. So you have to make that determination, not me. No one in the chat box can make that determination for you. No member of the site, nobody on the planet can. It's your determination. Now, if you lead them to believe at some level you're willing to get involved and you go that one step too far, shall we say, you maybe you grant some form of subject matter jurisdiction. You know, you tell them something, you give them that phone number to generate that unique code before they hand over the document or whatever it is they want. Maybe they'll use your car registration or your house number or whatever they're using. If you give that to them, you have given to them, and they will accept and they will use it. And understandably so. They're not wrong to use that, folks, if you gave it to them. How could they be? Because you gave it to them. You gave over your time, your effort, your energy. You expressed yourself to them. When you express, what happens when we express ourselves is the water of life. Okay, salt water. Saline solution is the water of life, folks. Not fresh water. Saline solution. If you're in an accident and you end up in an emergency, they don't put a drip into your arm with fresh water in it. It's saline solution they put into you. That's the water of life. And that's how they operate. So the individual's not at fault to ask you. I've heard people and seen things where people, oh, they're trying to oppress me, Vin. I said, no, they're not. They're not trying to oppress you. They're just simply knocking on your door and essentially asking you, hi, would you like to oppress yourself? Now, if you get involved, that's your lookout. As I said last time, when these people tried to do this, I didn't get involved. And eventually, the boys in the blue suits came a knocking. It was very unpleasant. I'd rather they didn't come knocking. I'd rather they didn't do what they did, but they did. And I relied upon the perspective and information and my own understanding from Mr. T and his wonderful education and helpful dialogue to form my own opinion on how I should deal with matters in my life. You see, I won't even say to you that I did what Mr. T said, because I didn't. He did say things to me. I took them on board, but I made the decision. Pardon me. Pardon me. I made the decision. It was me. And it had to be me. Because had it gone wrong, I don't have the right to blame Mr. T, say, had it gone wrong for me. Because I would have said something wrong or stupid, is probably a better word. Had it gone wrong for me, it was because it would have been my fault. It would never be Mr. T's fault. It couldn't possibly be. That's why if you hear me say something here, or anybody else on radio, and you try to use that, and if you mess up, maybe you don't even understand you've messed up, but you still may have messed up, you cannot blame us, or me, or anybody here, because you made the decision. And we make it absolutely clear to everybody who tunes in, what you hear on here, on People's Internet Radio, is our perspective, our opinion. Or we'll say, well, I read in the book XYZ, and here's what book it was, and here's what page it was, and paragraph, and line. In other words, well, apparently this is what the system is telling you about this matter, and here's what my perspective on it is, or is not. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm trying to get you, I suppose, to expand your mindset to, because that's what I did. I had a smaller intellectual box, as it were, and I had to push those walls out. I mean, you hear people say, think outside the box. I never really liked that term. I just call it thinking. Just think. Think about things. You know, when Billy Maguire was on, Chris Fogarty, and all the guests and all the people we've had on radio down through the years, I like to think about what they've said. I can learn things from people even I don't even like. I may not even like them, but I will really appreciate what they've said sometimes. Because what they've said may or may not be correct. But if I feel it's correct, and even, as I said, whether I like the individual or not, that's irrelevant. If I feel that was correct and intellectually sound and logical and reasonable and, you know, worthy of spreading, then I will spread it. That's my decision. And it's the same for this type of stuff. I mean, that little line, folks, I only discuss private family matters within the family. You would be astounded if you knew all the different people who've called me afterwards, who have used that lion and no other lion to amazing effect.
Yes, Clinton.
There you go. Can you hear me now, Billy?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay, I'll play that audio now, folks, and then at the end I'll come back on. Here we go. Let me know if you can hear this okay, Billy.
And citizens, today is our 100th anniversary of the Irish Republican Brotherhoods and Fenian Republican Brotherhoods rising. And I know that the Irish Republican, but we're airbrushed out of history by the provisional government. And I think it's a very sad state for those volunteers who went out today and gave their lives for you, that you would have a better life. And I think, you know, we will achieve it eventually. We have, they achieved the sovereign government. The name of the state that they achieved is the Sovereign Republic of Éire. And it's just sad to think that in the Sovereign Republic of Éire today, we have five governments. We have the British government in Northern Ireland. We have the six-county government in Stormont. We have the provisional government in Leinster House, imposed by King George V on the 6th of December 1921 as a British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland as an Orange Free State and a provisional government. That's what we have today in Leinster House. It's known as the Royal Dáil and the Royal Oireachtas. They don't recognise we have the sovereign government. And then we have the European government. And then we have the sovereign government by the will of all the people in the 1918 32 county election from GHQ Vaughan to Tellus, which is up there in Parnell Square. And I must congratulate Barton Darcy on his exhibition at the Rotunda, that he opened up all those tunnels to Vaughan's Hotel. That's how they escaped. We would not have bought, my family would not have bought Vaughan's Hotel without those tunnels, because you would not have, we wouldn't have been able to win the 32 county election of 1918, and we wouldn't have been able to win the War of Independence without those. The Tobin, the printing press, they were all printed there, and that's how that Michael Collins and the 12 Apostles and all Harry Boland and all those people were going up and down to Vaughan's Hotel. And those tunnels are there probably for a couple of hundred years. And they're so important that the people know where your sovereignty came out of. And if you heard Seamus O'Sullivan reading the proclamation, and Harry O'Reilly, our Vice President, reading the Sovereign Constitution, they're the foundation documents of the state, the Sovereign Republic of Éire. And they found it by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election, the sovereign government of Dáil Éireann, which was in the Mansion House. Dáil Éireann has never sat in Leinster House. Dáil Éireann never left the Mansion House. So I think there's a lot of politicians have a lot of explaining to do why they keep on now saying that they're going to Dáil Éireann. But the Irish Republican Brotherhood want that sovereign government by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election established. That government was established on the 21st of January 1919. All the institutions of the state were up and working, you know, all the departments. Michael Collins was Minister for Finance on the 6th of December 1921, when King George V imposed the British apartheid system for the 26 and 6 counties of Ireland. He was only provisional minister, and that's all we have today. I have explained the five governments that they have. Those four governments don't recognise that sovereign government by the will of all the people on the 21st of January 1919. That government is still there. It's never been dissolved, nor has anyone the right to dissolve that government. And I can tell you that we have five constitutions, and I would like to ask the courts which one they're using. We have the sovereign constitution. We have the Free State Constitution imposed by King George V in the Shelburne Hotel. We have De Valera's 37 constitution, when the Crown of England wouldn't allow him to put in republic. There's no republic in the 37. We have the British constitution, and we have the European constitution. But Harry read for you the only one by the sovereign citizens, that's you, is the first one, and that's the sovereign constitution. And we want that established again. And we want all when we're in Europe, and I think we have done fairly well in Europe, but the Crown of England is not the sovereign. The Crown is royalty, and it's the heart that's sovereignty. The British government do not have a sovereign government. They have a royal government, and they have a royal courts of justice. they depend on our half for sovereignty, and that's 1155. And I think all that should come out. And I think it's only fair that people should be told the truth. And I think it's very important. When General de Gaulle, he wouldn't allow Britain or Ireland to join the common market, was the EEC at the time, because Britain didn't have a sovereign government. They depend on their sovereignty from the half. And I think it's very important that that comes to the truth, reconciliation and prosperity process, which was founded down the University of Limerick in 1950. It was predicated on the Queen's visit, that all that information would be shared with the citizens here of our country and of Britain. And I think it's very important. When David Cameron said the other day that the people in Britain are sovereign, and that they will, their vote in Europe will be a sovereign vote, they're getting their sovereignty from us. The people in Britain are subjects to the Crown. You can't be subject to the Crown and be sovereignty at the same time. And I think it should be explained from all politicians, and you should be told the truth of what happened to those people here in 1916 and what they gave their lives for. That you would be the first four strings of the harp. You see it there over the door, is earth, air, fire and water, man's intellect and reason and his five senses. And you have a right, every citizen, ours. Harp, I said, was the covenant between God and man with all the information and knowledge for his planet Earth and our civilization. And that, and the first four strings are earth, air, fire and water, referred to in the Constitution. And you have a sovereign right to those. You have a sovereign right to the assets of the state, to education, hospital care, and a happy life. And with five governments that I read out, we should be the best governed state in the world. And instead of that, with five governments, we're the worst governed state in the world. And it's time you stood up to the politicians and made sure that you are told the truth. You vote for them, and you should be given those rights. All the assets should be there for you and your children. Every child here is born sovereign, and every child born in Britain is born subject to the Crown. And I think we know the difference. And we know where they get their sovereignty from. It's from the heart. And when the Queen, and that should be made very clear to people here. And we're going to raise our tricolour flag at 12 noon. We have probably half an hour. But that's what they did here. That tricolour flag, it was brought here by Thomas Francis Marr, who was a Fenian, and it was adopted by the Irish and Fenian Republican Brotherhood as the national standard. The Fenians were around, and so were the Young Irelanders. And James Stephens, who founded the Irish Republican Brotherhood down at 16 Lombard Street on St. Patrick's Day, 1858, and John O'Mahony, who founded the Fenian Brotherhood in Doheny's in America. And they are sister organizations. They were the ones who founded the 1916 Rising. And they, yesterday, I saw Heather Humphreys on television out in Glasnevin, and she wouldn't even lay a wreath on James Stephens or John O'Mahony's grave. I think that is the desecration. We have to stop that being desecrating our what those people did, our tricolour, our proclamation and our sovereign constitution. You are the sovereign, and you should stand up and be treated as sovereigns, and we should have a proper sovereign government that we had on the 21st of January 1919. It's still there, it's never been dissolved. And what are they talking about? This provisional government that they can't decide on. And I think we're not a political party, the Irish Republican Brotherhood, but we hold the mandate of the 1918 32 county election. Sinn Féin was the political wing of the Irish Republican Brotherhood. They won the 1918 32 county election. And Óglan na hÉireann is the military wing of the Irish Republic. They won the War of Independence. And that all happened there at Vaughan's Hotel, which we came down from this morning. And I think it's very important that you're told the proper truth. And I see that the tricolour has been delivered to every school and the proclamation. And yet none of those children are taught anything about their sovereignty. What's the sovereign seed, which is over the door there? The Book of Psalms is the Psalter, and that's the Psaltery, the instrument that accompanies the Psalms. It's Anno Domini 2016, and I think those people today who gave their lives will be delighted to see it, and to see we have a wonderful country. All we need is that sovereign government that was voted for by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election. And I would say thank you very much, and we'll raise our tricolour at 12 noon. which is flying today there since then. It was never captured. The tricolour was taken down by Dermot Lynch and was taken up. You know what happened. You can't understand 1916 if you don't understand that's when Sir Edward Carson founded the Ulster Volunteers in 1912. And in 1913, they became the UVF Army. And what happened was that they bought the top-class German guns and they became the UVF Army. And Guinness's Lord Rothschild and Rupert Kipling paid... Guinness's gave 100,000, Lord Rothschild gave 100,000, and Rupert Kipling gave 50,000 to buy those guns. And the Crown of England did not object to that. And yet, when Sir Roger Casement bought the guns here, he was executed, he was hanged for doing the very same thing that Guinness's and Lord Rothschild and Rupert Kipling did. You know, there's a big discrepancy of how we're treated. And the British government, in 1913, the intelligence officers of the Irish Republican Brotherhood reported to the Supreme Council of what happened. And they found that the Irish Volunteers and the Irish Citizens Army as a defence force. We don't have an army, we have a defence force. And we have them. And in 1914, the UVF Army declared war on Britain and Ireland if Home Rule was imposed by the British government. And I think it's very important that you understand that. That's, we do not go to war with anybody. And I told you that that tricolour flag here in 1916 was taken down and was brought up. They went up, that was the escape plan, was up Moore Street and down those tunnels which are there on the rotunda. You can see them from here. And I must thank Bartley Darcy for opening those tunnels. After 53 years, we finally can see them. And that was the escape plan. If they could get across the road, they would have got down those plans and they would have escaped to all the safe houses. And it's very important to know those two events in 1916. You can't understand. But we don't want to go to war with anybody. Always the Irish Republican Brotherhood is always the right and welfare of the sovereign citizens. And that's you. And all the assets of the states should be yours and for your children. And your children are sovereign citizens here. And we're very proud of that, and we're very proud of those people who made it happen. And I think the world today needs the Irish Republican Brotherhood and their proclamation and their sovereign constitution. People are sovereign, and they should be looked after, and we should be properly governed. And I think we would be properly governed with that sovereign government. Nobody has dissolved that government. And if anybody stand up and tell me that that government, by the will of all the people in the 1918-32 county election, we go to the Mansion House every year on the 21st of January and we hold that and we turn the sovereign seals for that. And I think it's a wonderful achievement by those volunteers and citizens army and coming them on in the field and in the hair what they did for us. And I don't think we appreciate it today because we're not told the truth. And I thank you very much, and we'll have our raising of the tricolour at 12 noon. Thank you indeed.
Wow, well done, Billy. You were extraordinarily concise.
I was delighted to hear it, and you know, I had only heard it a very sort of John played it for me, but it was a bit scratchy. But that to me was everything that
that was totally off the cuff.
Oh yeah, I didn't write out anything, and I didn't know. You don't know when you're saying these things. You know, you can easily make mistakes and things. You know.
Oh, I know. Anyway, and people love to pounce on those mistakes if they hear them.
Which we all make mistakes. But anyway, that's pretty accurate, and that's what I wanted to say. And thank God I have lived to see that the provision government and the Crown of England didn't wipe us out. We're still there, regardless of what. And that lady is Dee Forbes. She's the Secretary General, the new Secretary General of RTE, and she's from Cork.
Oh, okay.
And she was with, I'll tell you here, because I'm looking at it here. It was on the paper yesterday. She was... the head of Discovery Channel in Europe. Mm. That's where she was, and now she's coming. But she comes to Cork, apparently, every Friday. Right. She comes home. So, they might. I mean, it's awful to think that, you know, the hypocrisy and the lies and the deception, Vincent. You know, so we're not a political party or anything, and we've nothing. We only try and keep the thing alive.
And one of the most valid points you've said, not one, but a valid point you said there was nobody, and I've never read in any history book anywhere ever, Billy, anybody claiming to put a date or even mention when the sovereign government of 1919 was established. Nobody ever said when it was disestablished or dissolved or removed. I mean, even though, well, King George may have declared it illegal to him.
Yes.
Well, that was to him, perhaps, it was illegal.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
yeah.
You know, that when did the Irish people themselves declare it illegal?
Never,
and it never,
never
ever happened.
And let one come up and say it when it was. It was never dissolved. And I read the Sovereign Constitution, the foundation documents with the proclamation, and it said it can't even be put before the citizens.
And as Richard Beale... And as Richard Beale gave a fantastic, was it last year, or the year before maybe, on the step of the mansion?
Yeah. Richard is great, and I hope he's keeping well.
Yeah, but he was very precise.
He was there on Monday, and it was terrific. But, I mean, I must thank you, Vincent, and all our volunteers. You know, we don't have anything. We just work. We volunteer those, and we give it. You know, and the wonderful work that Harry and Christina and John and Nick and... You know Robert and
yes, I see. Yeah, Robert's in the
and all those and
Robert's
Tom
in the chat box there.
Tom Ryan, all those people, and they all and Paul Barnes is you know they all give their time for that just to try and get that information out for our people, and it's so important that what we have.
And the reason, Billy, that what I like to remind people is that the reason everybody is doing this is because we care.
That's it.
We actually care, folks. I mean, this is, you know, is this, I suppose I'll put it out there as a question. Is this not important, folks?
Gosh, it is everything, Vincent.
It really is.
Our sovereign and should take their sovereign. And look, I told you, know, what we have is wonderful. All we want is that sovereign government. And what are all those politicians going on lying and acting the fool up there in the Royal Dáil?
Maybe it's time to explain to people that the difference between a sovereign government and an imposed government is simply this. I mean, I've been asked to, you know, by some people, but can you put it in a nutshell for me? And I say, certainly. A sovereign government cannot oppress you. That's the difference. No oppression.
You're the sovereign.
Absolutely.
And people should know, as you say, Vincent, people should know what sovereignty is. And it's not abusing anything. And it's all about life. And it's all about living.
That's it.
It's all about the welfare of our citizens. You should be able to walk down a common street, you know, every sovereign citizen, not be hassled or, you know, and safe and looking forward to that. As it was when I was a child, that's the way it was. I mean, you wouldn't lock your car, you wouldn't lock your house, you wouldn't, people. And the old Mehel system was working, everybody helping each other. And trying.
Oh, well, the Mehels are alive and well, Billy. We've some of the guys on site are still operating Mehels to this day.
Yeah, you do.
But
not everybody
very well.
Does, and that's unfortunate.
Well, we'd like to see more of them
happen. Thank you very much for having me on your program.
No problem.
It was great to hear Chris and Mary on there, you know.
Absolutely.
And thank you, everybody, you know. And it's our 100th anniversary, and I'm so happy that I saw it. I'm getting pushing on, as you know. But anyway, you're there to keep it going.
I think you're healthier than me, Billy.
Thank you very much, Vincent.
Good night, God bless. Cheerio. Thanks, Billy. And that's it for me too, folks. It's 3 minutes to midnight, so it's time for me to knock off. And welcome back, Super Big Bad Man, for Cancel the Cabal. You've been listening to peoplesinternetradio.com. What'll I finish with?